Good afternoon, Milwaukee. This is the Mark Belling Late Afternoon Show on News Talk 1130 WISN. Weather situation. We're under a winter weather advisory for a few more hours yet today. It's been kind of like a lot of these first actual storms of the year is, in that not a lot of snow can cause a lot of trouble. And part of it is it's the wrong time of day that it came down and the wrong kind of snow. And it wasn't bad enough that, like, nobody stayed home or anything. So there's a lot of traffic on the roads. But the other component of it is, of course, a lot more snow in certain areas than there are in others. I mean, I live near the lake and nothing was stuck to the ground. I was driving into work around 11 o'clock this morning. It was like right when I got to 92nd Street, suddenly there was snow and like within another mile or 2 inches on the ground. It's just a matter of what was melting and what wasn't and where the temperature was and so on. We had a couple of big wrecks earlier in the day on the freeway system, one in Racine County and so on. So we'll keep you in tabs of all of that stuff, but it's kind of the deal that it is where you have one of those days in which the temperature is right around the freezing point and you have rain and snow and a strong weather system coming in. And this was the middle of January, the middle of February. We wouldn't even be paying any attention to it, but it's not the middle of either of those months. It's the middle of November. You picked up on that. It's the middle of November, right? All right. Today is also the day in which the Daryl Brooks sentencing hearing is going on. I have some introductory comments that I'm going to be making about that. But the first thing that I want to do is give you the 3 o'clock hour word in the Fall Fortune Cash Contest and then move forward. This is your chance to win $1,000. This contest, by the way, this latest round of national contesting ends this Friday. But the company keeps bringing back others. We don't know when the next one is going to be, or at least I haven't read what it's going to be. But they keep coming around. This has been another spectacular one for our audience. So let's try to crank out at least one winner on my program today. Again, you'll get a word after the tops of each of the first 3 hours of the program. Starting right now, 3 o'clock word. $1,000 is a national prize. The nationwide keyword this hour in the Fall Fortune Cash Contest is money. M-O-N-E-Y, money. You have until 3:55 to go to newstalk1130.com to enter the word money out of the contest for this hour. I've commented for years that one of the reasons why, there's a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons why we have a terribly flawed approach to the crime problem in our society is we focus way too much on the woes of the criminal and way too little on the impact of crime on the victims. Part of that is natural. Let's take, for example, the shooting that occurred over the weekend at the University of Virginia. Three football players were shot by a former football player. Motive still seemingly hard to figure out. There have been numerous stories about the shooter, and in fact, tremendous controversy over a Washington Post headline on one of them that inflamed many people who thought that the whole point of the headline was to be extremely sympathetic to the shooter. This happens all the time. When a crime occurs, obviously there's a level of interest in who did it. And if you're going to look into who did it, most of the people who know the person that did it aren't going to say this is a monster, it's a terrible person. They'll talk about all of the misfortunes the person had or the wonderful components of their life, and they can't believe that he would do this, that, or the other thing. And then we'll look into all the reasons why this occurs, and 98% of the focus is on the person who did it. If it's a murder, the victim's dead, so they can't speak. And if it's any other type of crime, often victims don't want to put themselves out there in the public, and there generally isn't much interest on the part of the media in doing so anyway. Again, part of the interest in the perpetrator is natural. Why did they do it? Take, for example, the Las Vegas massacre of a couple of years ago. I don't really recall any stories about all the victims. But there was an incredible focus, admittedly, including for me, why'd the guy do it? What's behind it? What would motivate someone to do something like this? The flaw becomes when that's all we ever do, that we can, as completely as you possibly can, miss the point. Even in criminal trials where someone is on trial, all of the focus is on the defendant. Did he or she do it? Did they not do it? Were they pushed into doing it? And then at the time of sentencing, you see the person, and, you know, they're sobbing in the background, all of that. The focus is almost always on the person. And then we have a segment of our society, screwed up as they are, that is utterly unbothered by almost all of these terrible acts. They've got a protest plan for either today or tomorrow. This is just, it just shows you how unbelievably tone deaf people are. Out at the Waukesha County Jail, over the Milwaukee County Jail death of an inmate that they don't believe has been properly investigated. Why are they going to Waukesha County? Because it was a Milwaukee County Jail case. The Waukesha County Sheriff's Office is handling the investigation. They're going out there during the time that people are... That we've got the Daryl Brooks thing going on. I mean, could you be more tone deaf than that? But we have all sorts of people. They take to the streets. They are incredibly impassioned whenever... Their passion seems to be greatest based entirely on how much the scum of the earth the dead person is. It's bizarre, really. You find a complete puke who dies wrongly, and they are terribly bothered by that. But you can find the most innocent a victim who also dies wrongly, maybe even with less mitigating circumstances, just cold-blooded for no reason. And it doesn't faze them. And the media is a big portion of this. I think that the evidence is overwhelmingly strong that there was police misconduct in the case of the death of Floyd in Minneapolis. But that doesn't mean that Floyd wasn't a terrible person. I mean, his whole life was a terrible person. The Kenosha shooting that led to the riots on the street. That shooting was judged to be proper by the police. But even if it wasn't, again, the person who was shot was a career criminal who was facing rape charges and had fled bail on that. When you see the cases, let's take the Wauwatosa case, the final of the three shootings involving Officer Mensah. You had a guy who illegally was possessing a gun, loaded, running toward a crowded shopping mall, refusing to heed to police demands that he stop, who then turned and fired a shot at the officer. Again, without regard to your belief as to whether that was a proper shooting or not, it's not like this is a sympathetic victim. The hell was he going to do running toward that shopping mall with the gun? We can speculate, but clearly nothing legitimate. Yet, again, in that case, intense attention from activists, intense protests on the streets, and intense media coverage of all the grievances of that guy. Almost never do we hear about the impact of crime on the people who are on the receiving end. And let's not even talk about murder for a moment. People who've had their homes invaded, middle of the night, somebody butts into the house. Occasionally, you will see some of those people tell those stories. 20 years later, they're traumatized. Nightmares, no sense of safety. In the end, they weren't killed. They often weren't harmed, but they're emotionally deeply scarred. Yet almost never do we focus on these things. Now, I think if we did, we wouldn't be so screwed up in our lenient approach to crime. It's clear that we in the state of Wisconsin have learned nothing over the last several years. All the Democrats that are soft on crime got themselves reelected to four more years. Josh Call, who is too lazy to even properly investigate referrals of internet, you know, abuse of children over the internet, reelected. Tony Evers, whose administration is releasing just about every murderer and rapist that they can find, and his Department of Corrections has turned the state prison system into a revolving door and has put a bunch of lefty judges on the bench. He got reelected, so we haven't learned anything. But one of the reasons that we haven't is I think we have simply fully not processed how horrible the crime problem is for people that are on the receiving end. We just don't do it. Now, again, I grant the first part is hard. It's simply easier and it's more interesting to look into the lives of the criminal. If the criminal goes on trial, well, there's this, that, and the other thing. If the criminal's arrested, you can dive in. That's part of the nature of it. Even a trial itself, everything is focused on the defendant. You see the defendant sitting there the whole time. Usually in trials, a victim. Even if the victim's families are in the court, they don't have signs like saying, I'm the victim's family. I'm the son of the guy over here that this bastard killed. Usually you don't have that. Again, the focus is almost always on the criminal. The one time, and it's really the only time in our system at all, that any focus is given to victims or, in the case of murders, survivors of victims, is at a sentencing hearing. Now, again, part of this isn't the media's fault. A lot of times, you know, let's imagine your mother was killed or you had a kid that was terribly injured. Maybe you don't want to talk to the media about it. But often I find that the media isn't interested in those stories. So it's a little bit of one and a little bit of the other. But only at these sentencing hearings do you ever have an opportunity from people who can share just how terribly they were affected by these things. For 3 weeks in the Brooks trial, we had to sit there and watch this guy making a jackass out of himself, acting like a goof, refusing to respond to his own name, raising objections based on the state isn't a plaintiff and all of his arcane, ridiculous things, fuming at the judge. Entire focus, again, was him. And again, under our system, he has a legal right to defend himself. The judge brilliantly handled the situation and the prosecution presented an outstanding case. But again, the focus is going to be on the bizarre situation of here a mass murderer is right in front of us acting exactly the way you would expect a mass murderer to act, like a completely uncaring monster. So there was certainly benefit in seeing it. But again, all of the attention was on him, which is, I think, probably why he's behaved the way that he's wanted. He wants all the attention on him. Well, today, and it's been going on since morning, victim after victim after victim, in some cases parents of children, in some cases people who were struck, and in other cases relatives of those who died, have been telling their stories. No, I can't play all of it on my program because, as I said, it went on for hours. So what I chose to do is, and we had some behind the scenes issues in here today, didn't we? I don't understand what all of them were, but we had some. The power went out for like a few seconds, and so that screwed up our feed from Madison. It also screwed up my computer for 15 minutes while I had to reboot everything. But you don't need to hear all of these things. But the short of this is, what I did is, and I want to explain why you're going to hear the portions that I pulled out. I pulled out a cross-section of, and again, a lot of, every single person who talked was compelling. And the ones that I'm not playing, which is almost all of them, for reasons that are obvious, it's not because I didn't find what they had to say to be compelling. I wanted to get a range of emotions and a range of stories. And I sort of went from, the thing's obviously still going on, and it's going to go on throughout the day. And then tomorrow, Brooks gets an opportunity to present whoever's going to be talking for him. He's yapping about doing something via Zoom or whatever. And then tomorrow afternoon, the judge sentences him. Anyway, we downloaded several statements, and I'm going to play them. It's not exactly in the chronological order, but I play them in the order in which I think you can get a feel for people from different perspectives who have different views on life talking about this. A couple of the people are from, and you'll, I want to explain some of the references for people who haven't been closely following this. They refer to themselves as the Catholic community. They're not saying that because they're Catholic. The Catholic community is actually an organization in Waukesha that marched in the parade. That's the name of their group, the Catholic Community of Waukesha. It's an organization. So when they say I'm in the Catholic community, they're not just making a thing of the fact that they're Catholic. That was the group that was marching in the parade, and they were in there as an entity. You're also going to hear toward the tail end of this from relatives of the grannies who were killed. So it's a range of stuff. I do want to mention a couple of other things. Midway through the morning proceedings, there was some sort of threat phoned into the Waukesha County Courthouse. They halted the proceedings for an hour, and again, it was just, I'm just a goof making some sort of threat, but it came in apparently to the 911 center at the communication center. In Waukesha County, they stopped it for an hour. The sheriff's department determined that there was no threat to the building, and then they resumed it again. Just the kind of thing that you have to put up with in this day and age. But otherwise, the thing has proceeded. It's pretty much the way that you would want to have it proceed. And right about an hour and a half ago, the judge had to throw Daryl Brooks out of the courtroom because Daryl Brooks did what Daryl Brooks does, which is make a damn fool of himself, being completely unmoved by any of these statements that he's heard from any of the people that he harmed or killed. He's literally not movable by this. For those of you who are wondering what he's doing when you hear some of the things that are going to be on, he was a combination of rolling his eyes, making gestures, and reading the Bible. I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen somebody read the Bible while rolling their eyes and making fun of people. It's just an unusual. It'd be like if you went into church, Paul, and you saw somebody was kneeling and praying with one hand and then giving the finger with the other. It's just an odd. It's just a very, very odd kind of. All right. So I think we had several people working on this. We even had to get. Can we tell what Dave Michaels had wrong with him, or does he not want anybody to talk about that? We don't know. Well, Dave Michaels came off his sick bed because Paul was unavailable because he was sloughing off, and Dave helped Eve. Paul objects to this. He had to do something with getting Vicky's show on the air. And anyway, so we've been doing a little bit of this through remote control, but I think I have all of it right in terms of what we play. The first person that you're going to hear here is, his name is Bill Mitchell, and he's part of the Catholic Community Group, and he was marching in the parade. He's a rather soft-spoken man, and again, he's part of a religious organization, and we're going to play his commentary here, and again, he's part of the Catholic community. He does take note during his comment here of the fact that Brooks keeps, you know, really obviously making a big shoo of the fact that he's going through his Bible the whole time. So this is the first of the victims that we're going to play. So this is Bill Mitchell.
Thank the court for this opportunity. I am Bill Mitchell, formerly known as Victim ZZ. To you, Mr. Brooks, I'm charged 52. On November 21st, 2021, I was marching with the Catholic community of Waukesha and the Waukesha Christmas Parade. I was walking in the back, and I noticed our banner was flying up because of the wind. So I went up to hold down the middle with so people could read it. I was joined by a priest who helped hold it down. We walked almost the entire joyful parade route. When something caught my attention, I turned around and saw a headlight. And then I was hit. I didn't see the driver, and I didn't see the type of vehicle. I flew over the hood and ended up on the ground with 8 broken ribs, bruised lung, fractured hand, finger, and my face was slashed open in several places, requiring stitches. Strangers and friends came to my aid as I lay bleeding in the street. I spent 3 nights in an ICU. Recovery was slow. My hand still has painful cramps that freeze in my fingers. But I know I was lucky. Others had a lot worse injuries, and 6 died. The impact on my family was great. My wife was home recuperating from surgery when she received the call that I was hurt badly and on the way to a hospital trauma center. Not able to drive yet, she had to wait for my son and his fiance to pick her up and drive her to Oconomowoc. And after I was released, she had to do a 180 from patient to be my nurse and help me in even the most basic tasks. The stress had slowed her recovery. The continuing pain was a major factor on me giving up a part-time job I enjoyed. We had to rely on family and friends for transportation to doctors for follow-up care for months. Neighbors pitched in to do my yard work and snow removal. Youth from the neighborhood decorated the inside of our house for Christmas. this crime had a ripple effect throughout the community. I do want to take this opportunity to thank all of you for your diligence and sacrifice to be here. I tell people I was blessed because I didn't see the carnage that night. I just saw people helping me. But the jury and all of you had to watch the entire awful scene on videos and hear detailed reports of what happened. I'm sure that's going to stay with all of you. I wanted to thank the judge for her patience and knowledge, the police, Detective Casey, for their thorough investigation and quick arrest, the prosecution for presenting such a strong case. A special thank you to Jen Dunn, Carrie, and the entire victims' assistance team that informed, comforted, and listened to the many people impacted by this tragic event. Finally, I can't bring myself to thank the defendant, but the response to the evil act he did shined a spotlight on how strong, supportive, and loving community we live in. Many people and organizations stepped up to help me. Family, friends, neighbors, coworkers, first responders, Aurora, doctors, nurses, my church family, the Catholic Community of Waukesha, Knights of Columbus, AOH, United for Waukesha Community Fund, Catholic Charities, and so many strangers offered support and prayers. The vast majority of people are good. That's it. Then there is Mr. Brooks. He is a unique individual who can have a clear conscience after running over kids like speed bumps and killing six people. I would suggest someone without a conscience. He doesn't ask for forgiveness. He doesn't admit to do anything wrong. It is never his fault. When he slapped a woman, it was her fault because she made him mad. I believe if he made it home that night with the red SUV, he would have told his mom the damage wasn't his fault. He was in a hurry and people didn't get out of his way. Some crazy old fat gray hair guy body slammed his hood. I didn't watch all the trial, but the parts I saw showed Mr. Brooks had a lack of empathy for his victims or remorse for his actions. The only regrets he seemed to have is that he was caught and the impact on his own life. Free, he would probably not drive through another parade, but chances are someone so self-centered as Mr. Brooks will hurt other people again. The only life he seems to value is his own. I don't believe that Mr. Brooks will think about me or any of his victims ever. The feeling is mutual. I really don't think much about him now, but when the prison door closes on this felon, I won't think about him again. I do hope Mr. Brooks will use the Bible for more than a courtroom prop. He may want to start with the basics that I know his family had taught him, thou shalt not kill. But then I want to read Galatians chapter 6, verse 7. Your Honor, I hope you give him the time to read and study the Bible. Mr. Brooks did everything he could to try to make the trial a circus. It is not a circus. It's not even about Mr. Brooks. Today, the court will hear what the trial is about, the victims. And as former victim ZZ, I would ask the court for a sentence that keeps the defendant, Darryl E. Brooks Jr., away from society forever. Thank you.
That was his name is Bill Mitchell. He was part of the group called the Catholic Community of Waukesha. He was struck, one of the many people who was struck, but as he said, fortunately, not killed when Darryl Brooks rammed through that parade route. And I thought in his comments, and he was somebody, again, part of a religious organization and so on, his comments were made in a reflective fashion and so on, but I thought he was just perfect in analyzing Darryl Brooks. And in my commentary throughout the trial, I've said that this is for people who don't understand the term narcissism, where someone is so in love with themselves that they literally don't have any feelings for anything other than themselves. I think that this guy nailed that, that is the way that someone turns out like Darryl Brooks. Their only concern is for themselves. They will always do what they want to do. Anything bad that happens is because of something others have done to them, and they have no ability at all to feel badly about anything that happens to anyone else. Their only feeling goes to themselves. The second person who testifies is a member of the same group, another victim. His name is Jason Peck Love. He's a soft-spoken guy. He talks about the impact of the trauma on him and his family. Self-explanatory, so let's go to that.
Mr. Brooks, my name is Jason Peckloff, and I'm with the Catholic Community of Waukesha. I was one of the victims you hit with the SUV you were driving on November 21st. What you did to my Catholic community and to the city of Waukesha show that you had no regard for life. What makes it more disappointing that you have shown no remorse for what you have done. While you're sitting in prison, I want you to reflect what you have done. I want you to reflect that you nearly took my life. I almost lost the chance to see my wife and kids again. I may have never had the chance to love or hug them again. You intentionally harmed my community, whether it was physical or psychological. You stole our innocence that day. Before that tragedy you created, it was a beautiful day we all experienced and never thought an evil thing like this could ever happen at a parade. My friend, myself, and the Waukesha Catholic community were asking parishioners and their families to participate in this parade. Imagine the guilt we must all bear for the rest of our lives. Because of your actions, I was out of work for about 6 weeks. Then I had to go back part-time because of my sustained injuries. Because of your actions, the multiple lacerations you created leaked out of the bandages and onto my bed comforter and sheets. What an awful visual to have. Because of your actions, I could have lost my foot. Thank God my nurse friend was checking on me. Because of your actions, my wife cannot get the images out of her mind of what you have done. You have forever scarred her. Because of your actions, my wife had to hand over my children to our community friends to check on my lifeless body. Because of your actions, my children, 4 and 6 at the time, had to go with a grieving friend to find her own child that was in lockdown. It took a while for them to be reunited. Because of your actions, my children are scared to death when they had to cross the same street you drove down. They were bawling and begging me not to cross the street. Because of your actions, I need to reassure my children that it is safe at parades. Not sure they ever feel 100% safe. Because of your actions, not all people in our community are ready to go back to the parades. Again, you stole that innocence from them. Because of your actions, my children are scared of sirens. Because of your actions, they were scared of red SUVs every time they saw one. They cried and hid. Because of your actions, I walked into the entrance of my children's school and felt like a triage unit. I saw children on crutches and a walker. What an awful image to be burned into my memory. Because of your actions, I feel terrible. I could not help my community and the city by testifying during the trial. Your cowardly actions did this. Your actions forced my family to seek out therapy and resolve in their minds what happened. Your actions made us second guess what we did that day. What could we have done differently? During this trial, you show no remorse. It makes you look like a monster. During the trial, you show little regard and respect to the court. It makes you look disrespectful. During the trial, you treated multiple witnesses terribly. You were trying to twist the words of our pastor, who is a man of the cloth. You made a comment to a witness you injured that he was walking fine now. It makes you a callous jerk. Despite what you have done to my community, I forgive you. Forgiveness does not remove the need for justice. Justice must be served and you must go to prison. My prayer is that forgiveness will heal your wounds and the wounds for the city. Thank you.
That was a witness victim. His name is
Jason Peklov. He was also part of that group, the Catholic Community of Waukesha. For those of you that are listening to this, we're just going to play about three or four witnesses who victims who testify during the sentencing hearing. This is their opportunity to speak and talk about the impact of the crime on them and so on. Not everybody was as polite and reserved as those two members of that religious group. And there was a really compelling moment that occurred that led up to the judge having to throw the insolent Brooks out of the courtroom. It's really, and I don't want to be repetitive and keep making this point. I think that this is just so instructive and so important for people to see. All these people who try to claim that nobody's ever responsible for their actions and it's society's fault, this, that, and the other thing. Here's a guy who's sitting there listening to people telling these unbelievably wrenching stories about how he has created this terrible damage. He just doesn't give a crap at all. Rolling his eyes, finding it amusing, finding a reason to object to something, bringing up some sort of nonsense. So you hear these people listening to this last gentleman he's talking about. You just pick up on a couple of things that you wouldn't think about, but he thinks about because he brought up his kids freak out when they see a red SUV. And, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I was always scared of sirens, too. And, of course, the reason you're scared of sirens, usually something bad was happening. But I never really had anything bad happen to me or anyone. And I kind of had that fear. Now imagine these kids thinking this and then the red SUV thing. I mean, think about the images we remember as kids and how you have a tremendous overreaction to these things that happen as a child. And you remember it forever and ever and ever. You know, if a dog barks at you loud, you end up scared of dogs for 30 years. Imagine these kids, and now multiply this toward all of these people in the parade. And the opportunity that these victims get to when they testify, they bring up some of those small components and you realize on how many different levels the impact of something like this is and how profound it is on them. As I said, we're going to share with you a couple more of these moments and then a really extraordinary segment where two people, both relatives of the Dancing Grannies who were killed, when they come up and they give their statements in which I'm not demeaning them in any fashion by saying this, they weren't as nice about it as some of the members of the Catholic community would be. And I want you to imagine how nice you'd be about it if your mother was run down by some person who just decided, because what the hell, I'm going to go kill a bunch of people at a parade. So we're going to pick up at that point. We've got other things that we'll be talking about in the program as we move through here. But I do think that for all the horrible impact of this event, it can at least be a teaching moment for us to understand. You know, every time there's a murder or a terrible incident, things like this happen. This one just produced a lot all at once because of the size of the event. But all the crime that we have all over society, all that kind of stuff that you're hearing here is felt by all of those people. And often the people who do it are people that we simply choose to keep letting out again and again and again and again and again, and then reelect the politicians who believe in doing that. So, yeah, I'm using this as a teaching moment in my own way. Ready to take your break in there? Seems to me that you have an easy job with all of this today. Yes, I think you got to. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, Dave Michaels had to do these dubs and so on. And well, all right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. And as I said, share a little bit more of this. We've got a lot of things that we need to follow up on later on in the program today, what's going on with regard to Republicans in the House of Representatives. There is now an official challenge to Mitch McConnell as leader of the United States Senate. As I said on yesterday's program, it's just kind of profound that there are two people under fire in the Republican Party right now, and they are the two that were feuding with each other, McConnell and Trump. I mean, the two extremes of the party, the establishment and the anti-establishment, both being blamed for what happened and both now under fire from Republicans who believe it's time to move forward without the baggage of either of them. So we'll get to more of that and move on to the program as well. I should also pass along news. This is overdue news, and it's finally happened. You know what that is, don't you? You know, he claims he's too busy to know anything that's going on. Paul, you know that there's been snow today. Are you aware of that? The Packers have finally cut Amari Rodgers. Why do I just think he's going to be signed by Tennessee and run two punts back for touchdowns Thursday night? Don't worry, that won't happen. What do you mean? Well, Paul says, who in their right mind would play this? I don't know. I mean, stranger things have happened, I guess. All right, let's take a break. 341 News Talk, 1130 WIS. News Talk, 1130 WISN, Mark Belling, late afternoon show. Let's bring you up to speed on the weather. The winter weather advisory we have in effect for the southeastern corner of the state expires at 6 o'clock tonight, but the precip is expected to continue well through tomorrow. According to Fox 6's Rob Haswell, the words he's even described this as a long-duration event. So it's going to be kind of like it's been today, where the precip comes down very lightly. There's just been a lot of it, and it's been rain or snow or a little bit of slush, depending on where it is that you are. And as you've been hearing in our traffic reports and so on, just a mess on a lot of the freeways. There's still that shutdown of I-94 northbound at 4194 northbound in northern Racine County, and other problems all over the place. For tonight, rain and snow changing to all snow overnight with a low of 32. And again, more snow away from the lake and more rain and slush closer to the lake. Snow likely to continue light, but through the day tomorrow with a high of 38, down to 26 tomorrow night, and then Thursday morning. Thursday, windy with some afternoon and evening fluffy snow, a high of 32. Chilly for the weekend. Friday, windy and cold with flurries, high 26. Saturday, mostly cloudy and cold, flurries 28. And Sunday, partly sunny, high of 28, lows in the teens each of those days. Now, some may wonder what's the point of going through 2 days of a sentencing hearing for a guy who by law has to be sentenced to consecutive life terms in prison without parole. And as I stated in my introductory comments on this topic, there's a point to this and there's a need to it. And I think it's an extremely important part of the process that, particularly obviously in cases in which there's not a determined sentence where it's up to the judge to decide, which is not the case here, but you need to have an opportunity for people to be able to express the impact on them of the crime. Our system is overwhelmingly biased, obviously, toward defendants. We don't want innocent people convicted, and we set up a system that doesn't allow the state to simply persecute people. January 6th and some of the other overreaches by government of holding people without bail have given those of us on the right an understanding of that. Nonetheless, the problem with having a system like this is we never really think about or consider the impact of crime victims. So we've played some of the statements that were presented to the court today, and I'm not going to say I've saved the best for last, but the most dramatic for last. But first, now this one. This woman's name is Lori Locken, and again, it's self-explanatory. She was one of the people that was struck, obviously survived, but struck by the vehicle that Brooks was driving.
Good morning. I'm addressing the court. Is the microphone on? Yeah, it is. Okay. I'm addressing the court, but I also want to direct my comments to Daryl Brooks Jr. My name is Lori Locken. I was walking with the Catholic community of Waukesha, my church family. We were celebrating the joy of the season in preparation for the birth of Jesus when you made your decision to drive through the parade route. It truly amazes me that you deny your accountability for the damage and hurt that you have willfully caused. In the years ahead, I urge you to carefully consider the sorrow and grief of the Waukesha community and the world at large. Ponder the loss of lives within our families, the physical and emotional injuries that may never heal, and the sense of personal safety that you robbed from us. As for me, you never gave me a chance. I turned around and it was only seconds before you hit me square on. I clearly remember feeling the impact. The searing pain of that blow is as clear to me today as it was a year ago. Since then, I'm healing as best as I can from the physical injuries, but you took away my peace and my trust. Something that I will never regain. My prayer for you is that you will find your salvation in the midst of this evil. I hope that you will repent for the heartache you have caused so many. I too pray that your own personal wounds that you have sustained through your life, which has created so many demons in you, will be healed through this action. Thank you.
Thank you. And she was part of a church group, and that certainly is part of the context with which she delivers her comment. When you think about, these are people, the first three people who spoke are people who were struck by a car, vehicle, SUV, and they're sharing the story about the impact on them, knowing that it happened in the larger context of, it's not like just I'm walking down the street and a car hits me, but all sorts of other people were hit, and many were dead, part of a deliberate act by somebody who was using that vehicle to do this to all of them, and the impact on all of them individually and then collectively in ways that you wouldn't necessarily think about. Now, I said at the beginning, I wasn't going to do this entirely chronological. The next cut that you're going to hear occurs at the beginning of the proceeding this morning, and something I think very relevant happened. And I'm going to tell you what it is so you don't miss it when it comes in. I'm not going to wait until after you've heard it to analyze it. For those of you who have not been closely following Brooks's antics during the trial, he's taken on this notion of the sovereign citizen movement, which is a movement that exists not just in the United States, but in other parts of the country. A handful of people in it, they don't believe that they're governed by the laws of any country that they're in or a state or anything like that, but they're governed by common law. It's a belief that they have, and generally it's nothing more serious than they don't believe in getting to register their cars. They don't have license plates. They don't have driver's licenses, and they'll interact with the police and often cause trouble just because they make a big deal out of nothing, and they have this view that somehow the laws don't affect them, and so on. But, and I want to stress to this, I'm not aware of any of them who say that this means we should be able to commit mass murder. But Brooks has glommed onto this, and I'm suspecting that during the time that he's been in jail with nothing to do other than go around on the internet and try to figure out some sort of cockamamie defense, that he glommed onto this, and he's described himself as being part of this. So he's been raising all through the thing, objecting to the state versus Daryl Brooks. First of all, the state. Who's the plaintiff? Who's the state can't be. I'm not subject to the state. I'm only subject to individuals. And just raising this, and he goes, subject matter jurisdiction, you don't have jurisdiction over me, all this crap, all this nonsense, but on and on and on he's been raising it. And the second thing, he suddenly claims that Daryl Brooks isn't his name. He say, and every, not every time, but virtually every time during the trial that his name was mentioned, he would interject, I object to being called by that name, and Judge Dora would have to say noted, and so on. And just the only reason to break, what, you know, I don't know what the sovereign citizen movement has to do with suddenly claiming you don't have a name, because most people in that accept that they have names, other than it's just something that he had, and it gave him 97 million different opportunities to object, and he apparently, in his mind, he's claiming that he goes by something else or whatever that is, but he doesn't respect that name. In any event, I want you to listen here at the beginning of the proceedings this morning, and what they do. You hear it all the time, the judge and the lawyers say, we have to create a record, create a record. What that means is when they say something, they want it to be in the court record when these things are reviewed for appeal and so on. Also, when these, you know, when everything is reviewed, any reviewing judge needs to read who's in the courtroom and who's present and so on. So they create a record. So one of the things that they do is they say who's there. And in any kind of a case, the prosecutors will introduce themselves by name and so will the defense attorney and so on. You'll hear first the prosecution introduce themselves. This attorney, Sue Opper, will name herself and her two colleagues. And then listen to Brooks introduce himself. So you got that ready? Here it is.
Paul, State of Wisconsin versus Daryl E. Brooks. Case number 21-CF-1848. May I have the appearances, please?
Good morning, Judge. Sue Opper, Leslie Basie, and Zach Wichow appearing for the state.
Thank you. Good morning, sir. Appearance, please.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Daryl Brooks, Jr. I'm here for this matter by special appearance. It is not my intention to bring any controversy to you, Your Honor, or your court today. I'm wondering how I may settle this matter. Is there anyone here in the court that can give me a rendering of the account?
Yes, sir.
please, if it
Mr.
pleases Brooks,
your
Honor.
Mr. Brooks, appearance is noted. The court will not be responding to that last question. We are here today to start the sentencing hearing in this case. This, of course, following your conviction on all counts, following the jury trial that concluded in late October.
And it went on with more of the back and forth and the idiocy that he brings up. A couple of points. First of all, he starts with, I'm here to settle this, you know. Okay, like if I pay $50, can I go home and go away? But more relevant to me is, time for the appearance, he introduces himself as Daryl Brooks. So this whole thing for weeks during the trial, if I'm not going to go, I refuse to be referred to by that name, was all just a crack. Because he doesn't have any apparent problem with calling himself that name now. So he's dropped that whole thing. The whole thing was just an opportunity during this trial that was so important to all of these victims in which he caused this hell to just come up with some fake, stupid point to keep raising again and again and again and again because that's how he got off. He did it for his total enjoyment. It wasn't even a sincere point. Or did he decide between being convicted a couple of weeks ago and this, that, okay, I guess it is my name. But the answer is there isn't even a thought process that's part of the whole thing. He's just a guy who right now is very limited in his ability to jerk anybody around, who still tries to jerk everybody around. And he's been very, very frustrated with the judge because she's figured out exactly how to handle him because she has this lever available, which is allowed under the law, of if he disrupts the proceedings, that she can make him go sit in another courtroom and watch it by video, and she can even mute his mic if he keeps interrupting in an appropriate fashion. So, repeatedly during the trial itself, that had to happen. When he would try to, you know, make these objections, she would just overrule him every single time and try to keep the thing rolling and through there. So he has tried every way possible to A, drag this thing out, delay, and B, raise idiotic points, because what other point would you have to raise when you're guilty of sin of mass murder? He didn't want to plead the insanity defense, because for a narcissist, what narcissist wants to admit that they're insane? So he's been left with these kinds of antics. But I just thought it was so revealing, especially for those of you who have been following this in the beginning, the number of times that he said, it had to be hundreds and hundreds, I refuse to be identified by that name, on and on and on and on. She had to keep saying noted and noted. And then here at the sentence, time to introduce him. Oh, I'm Daryl Brooks, for crying out loud. I mean, I don't actually believe this, but part of me would love to see the judge say, you know what, Brooks, I've decided to let you walk. And tomorrow morning at 10:30, I'm going to let you walk on right out. I don't want for that to happen. But when you consider how people who lost a lot more than I certainly lost, imagine your mother or your child, not to mention you're banged yourself, having to see this guy treat this all as such a joke. Imagine. We don't have to imagine much longer, because when we come back after the break, we do have, and there were a lot of, they were blood, relatives of people who died, including the grannies. There were some that I didn't even want to play. I mean, the mother of Jackson Sparks, the little boy, I can't even play that on the air. It was just too bad. But you're going to hear some blunt comments when we come back after the break from a brother of someone who died in the parade and the son of someone who died in the parade. And without giving away the whole thing, Brooks having to listen to all of this and the rage that these people had, he, of course, as usual, loses it, because how should I have to be putting up with this when there are so many important points that I need to raise about whatever the hell it is that he wants to raise? So we're going to get to that, and after we come back after the break, and then I'm going to move to the rest of the world. But first, before we do any of that, time for the 4 o'clock hour word. Paul thinks we need to give special credit to Dave Michaels, who contributed to this program despite being all banged up and all out of shape and so on. And see, he's a trooper. You would not have done it. I say that, you know, Probably so would I. I mean, okay, Dave Michaels has got more of a work ethic than either of us have. Well, he got his credit there, right? P.S. to that story, after I introduced the hour, standing up for Milwaukee, this is the Mark Belling Late Afternoon Show on News Talk 1130 WISN. It's hard to track all of these things because huge money donors to political campaigns, they give money to these so-called third-party organizations. I don't mean third-party as in independent groups, but they create a name for their group, like so forth and so on, and both sides do it. Anyway, until all the reports come in, it's hard to add up who gave how much to all of these causes and then so on. It is believed the guy who ran FTX was the number two leading Democrat donor in the entire country this year. Millions and millions. Only Soros on the Democratic side is believed to have given more. That part of the story, I just think that if a massive Republican donor was part of one of the biggest financial collapses of all time, with now indications that account money was embezzled in order to back up some of the other investments he was doing at FTX, I think that those political connections would be mentioned all the time. Anyway, I hope to get to the FTX story later on in today's program. We'll do our best. We have been discussing the ongoing, it's still going on, sentencing hearing today in the Daryl Brooks mass murder case, the Waukesha Parade Massacre. And obviously, victims and relatives of victims have been testifying all day, and we can't play all of that. What I have done is tried to pull out several different moments from today's court proceedings that give you different perspectives that all allow you to think about it. Here's my goal, and I've been very upfront about it. I want people to confront the reality of the damage that is done to people when they are the victims of crime, in this case, a terrible crime. It's just not given enough attention in our society, and maybe if it was, we wouldn't have so many jerk groups running around raising all sorts of hell when something bad is done to a monster, but don't seem to mind at all when government keeps freeing monsters over and over and over and over again to function as predators on the rest of our society. So for those of you who've been hearing the entire thing, you heard some very polite speakers speaking in the first part, and I'm not going to say that these people aren't polite, but in this segment, they presented relatives of people who died. And the first guy, I'm not even going to play him. He was very short, but he was very, very good, in which he essentially got up there and told Brooks off, and then he gave him that pat to the heart. And Brooks responded by doing it right back. You can't be any more insolent than that. Anyway, we're going to pick up after that point. This is a longer segment that I'm going to play uninterrupted. I might come in and comment a couple of times. But two individuals, both of whom lost members of the Dancing Grannies. And after this, before they could move on to the next part, this will be several moments of it in, but after the two men talk, there's a back and forth between Brooks and the judge in which, it just, after hearing these people talk and this impact that all, Brooks just, he's decided he's had enough of having to listen to this, and he pops and he starts raising his ridiculous, stupid objections, and it ends, of course, with the judge being forced to throw him out of the courtroom and take a break, which happened all the way through the trial. The two people that are speaking are, the first one is Chris Owen. He is the son of Lee Owen, who is one of the Dancing Grannies who died. And the second person is Michael Carlson. He's the brother of Tamara Durand, also a Dancing Danny, and she was the one, Dancing Granny, I think I said Dancing Danny, Dancing Granny. She was the one, this was her first time she ever danced. She died. So back to back, you will hear from both of these men. They are both well-spoken and really pull no punches, and they describe what horror was done to them, how awful it was, and I want you to listen to this because, first of all, it's very important and it's interesting, but also we need to understand as a society the impact of these crimes. So let's pick it up at that point.
If I could first thank the court, you, Your Honor, and your staff for getting us here today. I don't know how you did. You kept this under 4 weeks, and this is all going to be wrapped up, you know, before the first anniversary, and that means a lot. So I thank you for that. And if I could thank everybody at the prosecution table, our real-life Avengers, I mean, you guys did everything you could for us, and I'm forever grateful. Thank you. And I couldn't not thank Jen Dunn and her staff. I mean, she took all of us, supported us, made us into a family, and without them, I don't think I could have gotten through this trial. And Mr. Brooks, I hope as I read my statement, you continue to roll your eyes. I hope you continue to laugh and just show how bored and unmoved you are by all of this, because I think that's important. It's important for the world to see that evil can be a tangible, living, breathing thing. I think it's important for the world to see what human rot looks like. And to all the survivors, every time he puts his hand on that empty cavity where his heart should be, I hope you all smile, and I hope you take solace in the fact that today is our day. Today is for us. Today is so we can take our handful of dirt, throw it on his grave, and move on. Because that's what we all need, and that's what we deserve. My name is Chris Owen, and I am the plaintiff. I'm here on behalf of another plaintiff, my mother, Leanna Joy Owen. Lee Owen was a mother, a grandmother, a best friend, an apartment manager, and a dancing granny. The reason none of the witnesses saw her in this courtroom is because she was executed by a child-killing sex offender. And we are both injured parties. My whole family is an injured party. To my kids, Lee Owen was Nanny. And Nanny spoiled her grandkids every chance she got. On every birthday, she would call and sing happy birthday to their voicemail so they could hear it the first thing in the morning. She went on a tour of my son's summer camp. She danced in the same parades as my youngest daughter. She wanted my oldest daughter to use her car to learn how to drive so she could teach her like she taught me. And all of that has been ripped away. But the defendant's conscience is clear. To my dad, Lee Owen was the love of his life. They met when she was 16 and he taught her how to drive. From that point on, they stayed in each other's lives. And even though they divorced, she was still his best friend. They spent a lot of time together, and she was the only one who could get him out of the house. Now my dad has nightmares of her body flying through the air and shattering against concrete. But Mr. Brooks' conscience is clear. To my brother and I, Lee Owen was our mother. A mother who, even when she was struggling, was always there for us. She was supportive of us. She always told us how proud she was of us. Growing up, all my friends and my brother's friends knew they were welcomed at our house. When they were in trouble, having problems at home, or just had to get away, she always let them stay as long as they needed to. And for years, every time I came home from the Marine Corps, she got all those same friends together so I could see everybody and spend time with them. She was the one that made sure everyone got their Christmas list out on time. She made the best eggnog I ever had. And she made my grandma's mac and cheese whenever we were together. She recently renewed her passport so she could visit my wife and I in Turkey and travel the world with us. She also couldn't wait to visit Machu Picchu with my brother. It was her dream trip. Out of all the places in the world, that was the one place she had to visit before she died. And now the best we can do is lay her ashes there. But Daryl Brooks' conscience is clear. And I believe him. Out of everything he said in this courtroom, I believe that is the one truth he told. I mean, how else could he make a witness look at each of his battered friends that he ran over and ask, how do you know who this is? Throughout her life, Lee Owen was a hard-working woman. That's why when she found herself on hard times, she was able to overcome them. Even though it took years, she dug herself out of a deep financial hole so she could live the life she wanted, the life she deserved. And she was in the middle of doing just that on the evening of November 21st, 2021. And I know this is corny and cliche to say, but Lee Owen wasn't 71 years old. She was 71 years young. She was one of the most active people I knew. She just didn't have it in her to sit still. She always had to be moving or doing something, and this often involved people. She was very social and loved being around those she cared about, and people loved her back. She had a knack for making you feel good about yourself without even trying, because she always found the good in people. Even when it was to her detriment, it never dissuaded her from helping people any way she could, without judgment, without demand for repayment or feeling she was owed anything. She did it because she knew it was the right thing to do, and it made her feel good. She accepted people for who they were and made people feel good about themselves. That is what the world lost, and you have the audacity to tell this court that your conscience is clear. I'm sorry, Mr. Brooks. There's not a human with a soul on this planet who could snuff that light out, who could steal Lee Owen from this world and have a clear conscience. And that is why you hear the term monster. That is why you hear the term demon. You know, I saw you that day. It was just after you ran over the Catholics. I saw you hanging out of the window, looking back with a smile of satisfaction on your face, laughing at an inside joke that at the time I didn't get, the punchline escaping me. I didn't get it when my mom didn't respond to my texts. I didn't get it when she didn't answer my phone calls. I didn't get it the first couple hours my brother spent looking for her. I didn't get it until my wife sent me a video of you running over children in the parade. That's when I got the punchline. And it hit me like your red SUV, Mr. Brooks. I saw pure, unrepentant evil in your face that day, and it disgusts me that you are allowed to exist. And I know the answer to the question that everyone keeps asking. I know why you did this. You did this simply because you were not in a cage. That is what I find mind-boggling. And how dare anyone say the system failed him? The system failed every one of us whose only mistake was to bring their families in the vicinity of Mr. Brooks. That poor excuse for a man should not have been on the streets. That is the failure, period. But enough about him, because today is not about him. It's about us and what we lost. I lost my mom, Lee Owen, and I wasn't always a good son. I could be selfish sometimes. I could be mean. But no matter how angry or standoffish I got, she would bend over backwards for me, even when I didn't deserve it. And now I can never tell her I'm sorry. I can never tell her I should have been more grateful. I can never tell her how much I need her in my life. Yeah, shake your head. Shake your head. You know, because that is what you took from me. And there's nothing this court can do that would provide justice in my eyes. So all I ask is that you rot, and you rot slow.
The next relative of a victim comes up and talks here. That guy was Chris Owen, son of Leo, and one of the dancing grannies killed by Brooks.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Thank you for the opportunity that you're providing both to myself and to the rest of the families and acquaintances of the folks associated with this horrible case. My name is Michael Carlson, and I'm appearing here today both as an individual and a brother to one of the victims of November 21st. I'm here today as well as a plaintiff joining a criminal complaint against Mr. Brooks with a claim against him for the damage that he has brought not only to Waukesha, but to my family. And I'm also appearing as a posthumous spokesman for the victim, my sister Tamara Durand, who can't appear here today on her own behalf because Mr. Brooks killed her. In my personal aspect, I wish I could as easily forget about Mr. Brooks as he has seemingly forgotten about himself. Every day since November 21st has been framed by what he did in my own life, in our family's life. It is the reality I wake to. It is the reality I head to work to. It is the reality I confront as I try to fall asleep. It's the reality I confront as I go about the things I do during the day, my attempts to work, attempts to manage a household and be present for my children, and maintaining any sort of notion of normalcy in our life. But all these actions are simply a pantomime, Mr. Brooks, to forget that my sister was so stupidly and so needlessly killed by you. Perhaps you can forget what you did, but I can't. November 21 looms as a ground zero day in the story of my life, as I know it does in the life of so many others. I appear today also as a plaintiff. Mr. Brooks, you asked the court to identify a plaintiff many times during the course of the trial. Here I am. I'm one of many. We the people have brought this case and these judgments against you, Mr. Brooks. They reflect our values as a people and are enacted through laws passed by our legislatures, enforced by our law enforcement, and administered through our courts. We the people find you guilty. A lifetime is a long time to think and to spout nonsense. And Mr. Brooks, I want you to take no comfort in your future here in this comic book cartoon world that you've created for yourself involving the flags and barcodes and birth certificates. This is all nonsense, the stuff of teenage boys on the internet. That's not why you're here today. That's not why we're here today. We're here today and you are here today because you got in a car and instead of hitting the brakes, ran over children, elderly, and my sister, Tamara. I don't want you to live in the comfort of that delusion as you live there in the court, as you live there in the prison, convincing yourself that you're the victim of something, of some crazy internet conspiracy. You're not Mr. Brooks. You're guilty only of your own actions on that day, actions that you had an infinite number of times to stop. Any number of times you could have just hit those brakes, turned the other direction. As it stands, I'm a plaintiff, but I'm not a victim. The victim is Tamara Durand, my sister. She can't appear here on her own behalf because she's dead. She died when Mr. Brooks killed her on November 21st. Because Tamara cannot be here to speak, I will speak for her. Daryl Brooks, you took my life. I wish you hadn't. I had people to live for, people who needed me. My parents who are aging, my children who need their mother to help them make sense of their worlds, to cheer them on, to help them into their adulthood, to become friends with them. I have my grandson who relies on me, his grandmother, as much as I relied upon my own grandmother as I was growing up. I had people who needed me, people who needed me to cheer them on, to have me bring goodwill to the hospital bed where they were, or their families in the waiting room, who needed the comfort and prayers I brought to them in their moments of pain. I have friends who need to hear from me and families that need my early morning phone calls. I had places I wanted to see and things I needed to do. The only saving grace is I didn't know what hit me. And who would have ever guessed? Who could ever believe it? It's no surprise to anyone who knew me. After you hit me in that car, I got back up and kept dancing. I hardly skipped a beat. I didn't know you, Mr. Brooks. If the picture were reversed, if you were the stranger in the street in pain, needing care or comfort, know that I would have helped you. I ran towards pain and I ran into danger in my life. All you had to do was ask and you might have danced along with us. It was a parade, after all. We both died in vain on November 21st, Mr. Brooks. I died to life, and you now die to the world. We leave lives behind, family behind, children behind us. We both leave dreams, we leave choices, we leave successes, we leave failures behind us. I die to mine in an instant, you die to yours over countless days. May the God I'm with grant you the courage to confront what you've done, and to remember your own name. It's the least you might do for all these that you've left behind us who will never, who can never forget. Mr. Brooks, I'd also like to acknowledge that over these last couple months, I've sent you a couple letters in prison urging you to stand up, to be a man, to grow up, to accept accountability for what you've done. I also used those letters to share with you the love of the God that I believe in and that I know my sister Tamara believed in. I use those letters to share with you, especially the story of the final act of Christ on the cross, where he is hanging between two murderers, and he turns to the one and he gives them forgiveness. I urge you to remember, Mr. Brooks, that there were two murderers on that day, one who mocked the holy living in God, and one who accepted accountability for who he was. Your Honor, I urge you to provide Mr. Brooks a lifetime in prison to please contemplate that story and to remember his name and to contemplate which side of Christ he wishes to hang on. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The family of victim A is going to speak next. They do have some minors with them, so I'd just like to give them
some shenanigans. Some Brooks is going to ensue here
to adjust for that. And also, one of the minors does wish to make a statement and is somewhat vertically challenged. I'm wondering if she should stand over so that you may see her, or
sure.
She taken out before I have them come up. I believe Mr. Brooks was attempting to get the court's attention, so let me address him quickly.
I wanted the order of the court, if I may, really quick, pertaining to the last speaker. I have an issue with. If you would, if it pleases the court, we can address it later, or if you want to address it now, I don't.
These are sentencing remarks. I'm not going to interrupt those sentencing remarks to have you address him individually.
No, I'm not talking about addressing him individually.
Mr. Brooks, we're going to continue. I'm not sure what you could possibly bring to the court's attention about a speaker who's already made a statement.
A very valid issue that I can bring to the court.
You can put it in writing, sir, while you're sitting there, and if it's something I need to address, I will. But I'm not going to disrupt what's happening right now to address that. You need to put it in writing. All right, go ahead, Ms.
So, put it in writing that...
Mr. Brooks? Please put it in writing.
That's the same person you had to work with the father of, right?
Go ahead, Ms. Dunn.
No.
Like I said, the record the same
speaks for itself. All of those issues were previously put on the record. There's no need for you to make any
that
commentary
is him, though,
about
right?
it.
You did work with his father, though, right?
Mr. Brooks, stop. If you interrupt me again, you're going to risk going into the other courtroom. I'm not going
to
have
so
you
gonna
degrade the integrity of these proceedings.
I'm not attempting to cause
what's
controversy.
Going on right
I just
now.
Wanted to know.
By once again trying to derail what's happening.
Man,
and
you
take the
always
focus
talk
off
about somebody trying to derail something. As if that was the plan, like somebody coming
Mr.
here
Brooks,
to derail something.
I'm advising
something.
You to be quiet or I will clear this courtroom and under Illinois versus Allen, you will lose your right to be present while the remainder of these individuals give their statements.
Okay, well, come on with it.
Once they start, I expect you to
come
be quiet.
Come on with it, because that's what you've been waiting to do the whole time.
Listen up and listen what she has to say.
All right. Sir, you're going to have to be removed. I'm sorry. I can't tolerate that from anyone. Mr. Brooks, my admonishment to you is the next person's going to get up. And they're going to start their statement. And
okay, yeah, but you made it seem like I'm trying to purposely interrupt that.
Mr. Brooks?
And I don't think that's fair to do that.
Please be quiet.
Okay. Yeah, I still have the First Amendment right to be heard and to speak. I still have that right.
Mr. Brooks, this is a sentencing hearing.
I don't care what it is. You're not going to continue.
He is arguing with me. He is now informed.
You're not going to continue. You're not going
to
continue.
Everyone has to clear the courtroom while he's moved to the next courtroom, and I'll make the appropriate findings when I'm able to do that.
So can I get a finding of fact? Can I get a legal finding of fact? Because I don't agree to it. Stop it.
And it was at that point that they had to adjourn, and Brooks was thrown out of the court, and there was a break for a while, and then they proceeded. All of that, again, was 18 or 20 minutes, was chronological in an order. And you heard the two people, one the son, in his name here, Chris Owen, the son of Leo, and then Michael Carlson, the brother of Tamara Duran, both members of the Dancing Grannies who died during the parade. And they showed their obvious anger as they emotionally discussed what they lost. And that's what set Brooks off, is he's coming up with this thing and he had a problem with something about one of the, the second person who talked and some connection that was in place that he wanted to make us think about. Nothing had any impact on him at all other than he was mad that he had to sit there and listen to this. And this is the thing that set him off from the beginning. And I think for people who have tried to understand why he did this, this is his trigger again and 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 again. And again, he can't stand hearing something that he doesn't want to hear. The thing that immediately precipitated the parade massacre was the argument with the ex-girlfriend who is the mother of one of his children. That was the incident that occurred right before the parade began. It was the incident that occurred when the slapping incident occurred, when the ex-girlfriend got their friends to come over and intervene, and then Brooks had to leave. He got hacked off because he didn't get what he wanted out of her. And his response to that was to blow up and decide to slaughter people. And in a much less serious way here, he had to listen to these people. He's powerless to be able to do anything about it. He's convicted. He knows that if he makes too much of a stink, they're going to throw him out of the courtroom. When he throws out of the courtroom, then he can't go on and carry on in front of anybody. So he didn't want to be thrown out of the courtroom. But he's got to listen to this and listen to this. And these two people weren't particularly polite about the whole thing. And they're laying out exactly how horrible his action is, and he decides once again to make one of his picayunish, stupid little objections, and it drives him crazy that he can't manage to pull Judge Doro's strings. You can just see that. He gets hacked off at that. I have a right to do that. I have a right to do that. No, you don't. You're going to shut up and listen to this. And then she comes up with her thing. Put your thing in writing. He didn't want to put anything in writing. He doesn't have any point to actually raise. He wants to make a stink and make a ruckus. And again, he didn't get his way. So then you see, again, for people who wonder how these people turn out the way they are, this rage. Bring it on! You just see a complete window into, and it's very easy to imagine, a guy that gets this angry over something as silly as that, slaughtering people. Yeah, Paul says he gets it, and I've been watching this trial from the very beginning. Every time he has one of these things, when there was this, during the trial, there was a stare down, which he stared for 7 minutes at the judge with this unbelievable Manson-like look. Each time it happens, you get it. You get it. But during other times when Brooks is there, it doesn't seem like he'd be that bad of a person. It doesn't seem like he would do anything like this. And we end up deluding ourselves into not accepting the fact that some people are purely evil. And this trial has served a real positive purpose in that, A, we have to confront what happens when we as a society let guys like him repeatedly slip through our clutches. B, we are able to learn that there are people who are monstrously awful people who will do horrible things for no reason other than it's what they feel like doing at the time. And C, to confront the reality of the awful human impact and tragedy of the actions that people like this create. And again, this has been going on all day. There have been a lot of very powerful statements coming from victims, relatives of victims, people who were in the parade, people who were, and so on. And we're going to move on here and not continue to play those. But I thought it was a good cross-section that we could give. And then within the end, him having another one of his little tantrums and so on. There isn't one of these tantrums that has had any sincerity to it. And he demonstrated this earlier with the cut that we played in which he refers to himself as Daryl Brooks. The guy for 3.5 weeks made this huge stink about how he does not be referred to by that name, that that's not a name that he accepts and so on. And now either he forgot that that's his thing or he's moved on to a different thing. Now that's his name again. Well, Paul says it surprised nobody. I mean, you heard toward the end of that. I didn't comment on that. We did bleep out because there were a couple of vulgarities that were in the person's comment. But when Brooks was objecting and objecting and objecting, the camera's not on the person. But the only people that were in the courtroom other than the court officials were these people that were waiting. I should explain. When they've had these victim statements, they bring them in groups. In other words, there's group one, group, and it's like groups of 8 to 10, and then each of them take their turn so that they're able to do it sort of as a pod. And then when one group is done, they take that group out, and then comes the next one. And the people who are testifying, they don't go up to the witness stand. They have like a stand for them back where the lawyers are standing, so they're facing the court. So chances are that it was one of those people that was part of this group, either the one of the people who was testifying as a victim or a friend of that person, that just had it. There he is going on, and he won't shut up and going on with the judge. And they just tell, will you shut up and listen to the judge? And that's all they're able to do, because unlike him, they don't do when they don't get what they want. They don't just get up and are able to go over and kill him. The amount of restraint that has to be shown for this. I got to get to a break, but it reminds me of, you may recall the Nassar case. That was the guy who did all the crude examinations of the gymnasts and athletes at Michigan State University and was convicted of hundreds of counts of sexual assault. One of the relatives of a victim, you recall, screaming at him and lunging at him in court and trying to come at him. Now, the judge didn't, in that case, do anything to him, and I don't know that if Judge Doro would do anything to somebody who did, but of course, she's got to maintain the proceedings, so they throw the guy out of court who says, you know, interrupts the thing and so on. But this has been the entire trial, him functioning in this fashion. And I just think it's revealing. And there are people who are going to, well, he's clearly mentally ill. Well, he's not wired right. But you can see from the very, very beginning, he knows what's right and what's wrong. It's why he's tried to come up with these cockamamie rationalizations for what he's not hearing voices. He's not somebody who has any confusion about what you're not supposed to do in society and what you are. He just has never given a crap. He wants to do what he wants to do it his entire life. He's been able to get away with doing all the things that he's wanted to do, and he finally went too far, and now he's going to face some sort of consequence over it. And now people have authority over him. The judge has authority over him. The jailers have authority over him. The bailiffs have authority over him. And these people that are getting up there and testifying, they have some degree of authority because they get to tell him off it. He can't respond. He can't go slap him in the face like he did the girlfriend. He can't do any of those things. And then when he tries to raise his stupid, ridiculous, dumbbell objections over this, that, and the other thing, judge rejects it. He wants to keep on toying. He's so enraged by that. No, Paul says that do people finally realize how wrong all of this is about letting all these people out on bail again? And no, I think that they don't. Look at the results of the last election. No, I don't think it's sunk in. I think it has sunk in for people that are wired straight, like most people listening to my program, yes. Do I think it's sunk in for the handful of Republicans who decided to vote for Tony Evers because they were hacked off that Becky didn't win, or they were hacked off that Ramthan didn't win, or they were too lazy to go? No, I don't think that it's impacted them. But I think for the half of society that's not nuts, which is about half the state of Wisconsin and half the country, we fully get it. But I don't think it's, I just think it's never going to sink in for anyone else until something like this happens to them. And I have tried to use my program always to put people in the other guy's shoes. And I thought that today was a tremendous opportunity for us to see what it would be like to be in all of the other guy's shoes of people who are so badly impacted by the massacre that occurred at that parade. Oh, there. What, you have other comments that you want to make now that you're all rough? Paul says that's powerful audio. People don't get it. Well, yeah, people don't get it. And that's why you never do hear from victims. All of these, I don't know, for example, if any of these people, part of it is they're encouraged not to talk too much before the trial because of prejudice and all of that stuff. And they had to be able to have a jury pool that wasn't tainted and so on. But the media never wants to give voice to people like this, and you almost never do give voice. The day that Brooks was convicted by the jury, there's who's Channel 4 talking to? His mother. And again, I don't blame his mother, and you know, I don't think she did anything wrong with regard to this. But again, what's the impact on the mother? Oh, for crying out loud. I'm sure it's a terrible impact on her, but of all the people whose impact I'm with, there's a lot more people, but who do they run to and have to go put the microphone in the face of? And tomorrow he's going to have his chance, and I guess two or three or four of his relatives or whatever are going to talk via Zoom on behalf of him, and they'll get a lot of attention and so on, and we're going to find out, oh, well, because of this happened to Daryl, that happened to Daryl, and, you know, Daryl probably gave a lollipop to his kid. What's just all this crap that you hear forever? Ever and ever and ever. And all I tried to do today was give a big megaphone to people who are on the other side of this. And it was only a small fraction. And things still going on today. And at least I'll check and update. We've been trying to keep tabs to see if anything dramatic occurs. But it's been basically the same thing. Powerful statements from people who were injured or relatives of those who died. And every now and then, Brooks acting like a fool and the judge having to put him in his place and corral him. And after tomorrow, when she sentences him to multiple life terms without parole, not even Tony Evers' parole commission will be able to figure out a way to get. But Paul's point, do you think people have finally figured? No. I mean, no. We've re-empowered a governor who has corrections people who don't believe that people like this should. Fortunately, Daryl Brooks is sentenced now that we've gotten rid of parole, or he'd be the kind of person that would be let out after 20 years like by the people that Tony Evers puts in charge of his parole commission. I mean, that line, the system failed him. No, the people who fail us are those people who continue to elect liberals who have this mentality toward the criminal justice system. That's who fails us. Yeah, you're right. We had that chance. And some people come up with 97 million different reasons. Well, you know, Trump endorsed this guy, this, that, and the other thing. They're all out there, and there's all these excuses as to why we don't do anything about any of these problems. But we don't. We don't. When I say we, of course, I'm referring collectively. Can't blame me, and you can't blame Paul, and you can't blame the 97%. Well, it's not 97. The 77% of the people in my audience who did the right thing, for those of you goofs who can come up with some convoluted reason to vote for Tony Evers. And I'm not trying to say Tony Evers committed this crime. What I am saying is that this person was free because we have numerous people in our criminal justice system who give chance after chance after chance after chance after chance to criminals like this. In terms of the future here in Wisconsin, there will be proposals from the Republicans in the legislature to reform bail laws. If they don't pass, we're going to try to amend the Constitution to come up with, to make it easier for judges to deny bail to people who present a threat. But there will be, despite all of this with Brooks, people on the left who adamantly oppose this, and they'll go on and on and on, all the reasons the society made them do it, and this, that, and the other thing.
Trying to cure a 7-year ache. See what else your old heart can take. Boys say, when is he gonna give us some room?
News Talk 1130 WISN. Mark Belling, late afternoon show. I'm going to call an audible here. Firing myself up with hearing some of the comments that victims of Brooks have been making through the sentencing hearing. What I'm going to do in this segment, and when I'm done doing this, we're going to give it the 5 o'clock hour word in the Fall Fortune Cash Contest. I'm going to use the reporting here from Fox 6 and JS Online to just quote some of the many, many, many other victims, brief statements that came from each of them. And again, these are the portions of the quote that were pulled out by those two news organizations. So I'll just quote some of them. Again, I just think it's important to hear. Jason Pekloff, Catholic Communities of Waukesha. You have shown no remorse for what you've done. You stole our innocence that day. Never thought an evil thing like this could happen at a parade. Margaret Pachulis, also the Catholic Communities of Waukesha. I remember the moment someone yelled, "Car." After that moment, I have a voice in my memory. Jeff Rogers, whose son marched with the Waukesha Blazers. We were literally inches away from losing our kids in my life. I play it over and over in my mind. The moment was a blur. Jessica Gonzalez, also with the Waukesha Blazers. Daryl Brooks drove through our joy. I cannot offer forgiveness. I cannot. I ask that the full sentences be issued and he spend the rest of his days without the possibility of parole. I referred to this earlier. I couldn't play it on the air. Those of you who want to find it, it's out there on the internet. Sherry Sparks. I think I identified the 8-year-old who died as Jordan. It's Jackson Sparks. He's the mother of Jackson and Tucker Sparks. Tucker was with Sherry, the mother, when she gave her statement. This is tough. I'll read it. My boys were walking, again, the other child, the surviving child, was standing next to her when she gave her statement in court today. My boys were walking with their friends. I wish I would have known that the last hug I got from him was the last hug. Every holiday, there will always be an empty chair where Jackson should be. It hurts to breathe sometimes. I'm emotionally and physically exhausted. She then finished by saying, Jackson, the other victims deserve closure. And then they had a minor, not identified because it is a minor, who was hit. How could you do this? Would you do this to your kids? A mother of a child injured in the parade. I saw absolute pain in my children's eyes. Brooks hit my children and never once stopped. Kelly Grabo, a daughter, whose daughter was marching. Brooks has given us a life sentence of these memories. As a parent, we are supposed to be able to protect our children. And that day, many of us were reminded of the ugly in this world, that no matter what we do, there will always be monsters like Daryl Brooks that are lurking around corners, just waiting for a chance to play those parts in our nightmares. Yet even after causing this much pain and destruction, he wasn't even happy with that. He didn't stop there. He took it upon himself to be his own representation, knowing full well he would be given the chance to question us as victims and rip open the wounds once again. Katie Pudlinger, who is the mother of Tyler Pudliner, who marched with the Waukesha South Band. We have found a new family, 62 survivors and 6 who had their wings taken. She urged Judge Doro to apply the maximum sentence to Brooks, quote, so the community can heal and grow and never have to go back. Then her son Tyler, who was marching in the parade, member of the Waukesha South Band, you did an amazing job throughout the case, Tyler said of Judge Doro. He apologized for being critical of the judge during the trial and later acknowledged her sainthood, referring to her as a mother and true hero to this community. Sasha Catalan Castillo, also in the Waukesha South Band. I don't really know how to show my emotions anymore. Donald Teagues, who is the father of Eric Teagues, who was injured also marching with the Waukesha South Band. You stated you are a God-loving man. You are not a real man would have stopped and asked for forgiveness. Pure evil. You're not fooling anyone. Again, that's a compilation of some of the victim statements in court today from Fox 6. See if I have anything else over here. Again, the Sherry Sparks, the mother of child who died, Jackson, was just really strong stuff. And again, it's been all day kind of like this. And as I said, it not only serves the purpose of being something of a catharsis, not much of one, but something of one. I just want to keep stressing, these stories need to be heard. I wish we could hear them in every one of these terrible crimes. I wish we'd have the ability when somebody carjacks an elderly woman by sticking a gun in her face and takes her car and goes off in a drawer wide only to have the person be given probation. I wish we could hear all of those people. Wish we could start relating to all of these things and understand the impact that's occurred. And again, I understand that as crimes go, this is the mother load what this guy did. The damage that he did in doing it in public and the fact that many people who were there are never going to be able to recover and there's going to be an impact on them forever and ever and ever. I'm not suggesting every single crime is of that nature, but the point of these statements is, first of all, in some cases when it's not determined, it's, you know, multiple life, you need to hear these just so the judge hears that and considering what they're going to do. But in a case like this, what other chance do these people have to be heard? It's not like anybody from the media is running up and giving them a forum. This is their chance to say it. And yes, it is important that they say it with that creep in the courtroom they're listening, which is why he'll act up from time to time, almost wanting to be thrown out of the court. I mean, he's got to be torn. If I get thrown out of the court, he's just like a child. If I get thrown out of the court, I can't act up in front of anybody. On the other hand, if I sit in here, I got to listen to these people saying these terrible things just because, oh, wow, their kid died. That's what he is. What he is. What are you looking at me for? Like I'm crazy or something. All right, 5 o'clock hour word. Fall fortune cash contest. You're not going deer hunting again, are you? You're retired from this in general, aren't you? Your brother's begging you and he's still not. I just, like I said, I know where you can find deer. Just look out our window over here. I mean, you know, what is it about deer? Some are just smarter than others, right? I mean, if you were a deer, wouldn't you just come down here where nobody can do anything to you and just, you know, just walk in front of us? I mean, a few days ago, I'm just driving down 116. By the way, is Beloit Road now open? I think it is, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, what's been closed for 4 months, is that opened? Oh, then it's not. There'll be people who are going to call up now and claim that it is, and others will claim that it won't. So we take these little ways to the back to get to our station. You know, and it's the time, the reason deer hunting is to coincide with the time that they're in rut in the season, because that's when the deer move around. It's when they're all sexually aroused, is essentially what it is. So we have this big route by the Root River Parkway, and there's all this wooded area back here and then lush subdivisions, and there's a million deer out there, but they come out at this. There's like seven of them that are going across the street, and I'm sitting there and not a care in the world. I mean, you know, I'm guessing when deer hunting season's going on and guns are blasting right and left, these deers are edgy and any little thing is spooking them and freaking them, and they're trying to lay as low as possible. These deer around here, they know who rules the world, them and not us. Yeah, you know, if he hits me, I'll just bust out his windshield. I mean, they literally, Paul, I swear they slow down when they see me on the roadway in there. Well, and then you never know if there's 16 of them behind that, because they'll just keep running too. Let me finish off the word. So anyway, it's not legal to go shoot the deer out here, but if you want to just go and do it, and like, I want you to get the two that like were making fun of me that were. Well, see, I don't think you can do any crossfire. You can't do any of it in Milwaukee County. I don't believe it's. Yeah, part of the reason the deer population is so big in the suburbs is because there isn't a real predator other than the handful of coyotes that are around here. I haven't seen any wolves around here, but some of the coyotes can get the fawns. I don't know. Can a coyote get a full-sized deer? Yeah. Well, there's them. Getting off on numerous tangents here. News Talk 1130. WISN, Mark Belling, late afternoon show. We're going to go back to the Waukesha County Circuit Courthouse where the sentencing statement is being given by Waukesha County District Attorney Sue Opper. We're going to pick this up in midstream.
So many of the people that were there of that fight or flight, right, that kicked in. He ran. He fled. He tried to protect his own self. That's it. That's all he did. Everybody else sprang into action, whether that action was to immediately account for their behavior, for their family and get them out of there to safety, whether it was good Samaritans. And Judge, I really thought long and hard. I had a video clip that I was perhaps going to show to you. You've seen a lot of this during the trial, but I mean, it comes from the clip when I showed during my closing argument near the end of the parade route where the Catholic community had been struck and all the shoes laying in the road and things like that. That person that took that video walked down Main Street for quite some time and captured quite a few images, and it's really quite powerful, but I also thought it's really quite painful. But one of the things that was just so remarkable to us as we watched things like that was the average citizens that just sprung into action to save somebody else. There's a particular moment where there's a person on the ground fervently performing CPR on a victim in amongst a pool of blood without any regard for themselves whatsoever. I don't know who this person was. I don't think I'll ever know. But it's a prime example of the good that came out. So many people talked this afternoon about good versus evil, and I definitely believe that's what this case was about. Daryl Brooks is the epitome of evil. He is evil in person.
No,
you
may not.
The community is good.
Order
the people
of course,
are good.
I think it would be
the
best.
The victims
for me to just
are good. Mr. Brooks, I'm talking.
I don't care about you talking.
I don't care what you care about.
I know you don't.
Sit down and be quiet.
No.
Everybody has told you
nah,
that.
Nah. See, you got it all wrong, Miss Opper.
Judge, the community has spoken. This jury returned a verdict in 2 hours. That's how open and shut this case was.
Well, actually, it was
everybody saw it.
Actually,
everybody but Daryl Brooks. This jury deserves to be commended for their conduct, their patience, their service.
Mr. Brooks?
I asked to go to the other courtroom.
I'm not sending you there.
So we wouldn't have to go.
It's not, that is not a place you get to request to go to. It's when you disrupt the proceedings. She's almost done.
I'm trying to disrupt the proceedings. I'm trying to go to the other courtroom.
No.
So she can finish saying the BS she got
to
say.
I wanted to share something with you, Judge. This is something that came in on December 5th of 2021. An anonymous letter came. Well, it's not anonymous. It's signed, but it's from a person we don't know. From another state. From the state of Kansas. December 5th of 2021. This person took time out of her day to write a card to... It's addressed to the Waukesha community, and it was sent to our office. And she wrote, "We have been praying for the healing of your community. Please know that there are people who care deeply all over this nation." That's the kind of message Daryl Brooks needs to hear. Because I know during the trial, there was a lot of cards, a lot of messages received in my office and in your office. Good, hardworking, decent people that respect the law, that respect human life, that respect their neighbors, that would take the time to comment and say, good job. We support you. We are with you. And you saw that strength behind me all day. Those young kids, children, coming up. I mean, Your Honor, I'll say this. God is good. There's been a lot of talk about God. There's been a lot of talk about religion. Daryl Brooks brought the Bible into this courtroom.
Every day.
These children are remarkable for their strength, for their healing, their physical healing. We haven't met these kids before. We've never met them. We met them today for the first time. You would never know the serious injuries that they suffered as a result of Daryl Brooks. By looking at them, of course there's much healing to be done. But isn't it remarkable that in a year's time, look how far we have come as a community. Look how far these families have come. These families, these victims that stood up and pointed to Daryl Brooks and said, you will not beat me. You will not knock me down. That's what we need to move forward with as a community, Your Honor. His behavior is done. We're done with him. He has forfeited his right to be in this courtroom. He's forfeited his right to be in our community, period. There is not one thing that mitigates this sentence. Not one. He deserves the absolute maximum sentence on all counts consecutive. Look, Judge, you saw the videos. This wasn't him plowing in to one large group of 50 people at one point in time and hitting them. It was linear. He hit one, kept going. Hit two, kept going. Hit three, kept going. All the way down the street. That's consecutive sentences, Your Honor. That's intentional, willful, volitional conduct that warrants consecutive sentences stacked one on top of the other, just as he stacked victims up as he drove down the road in complete disregard for any other person whatsoever. We kept the kids out of the courtroom in the trial, Judge, but boy, it's impactful to listen to them today and realize this isn't just, you know, victim GG. This is a child that you willfully ran over with a 3,000-pound vehicle, as so many people so adeptly observed. Police officers, first responders, the medical professionals. It's kind of weird, Judge, because we're coming up on the anniversary, of course, and we're coming up on the weekend before Thanksgiving, which is a weekend that a lot of people pay attention to on the calendar because here in good old Wisconsin, it's deer hunting season. It's a lot of families going out, starting their Christmas activities, Christmas festivities, Christmas shopping, whatever it is. So it's kind of that kind of a weekend that comes around every year that on its own, it's not a holiday. It's not really a known day. But we all know that first weekend before Thanksgiving and what it brings. We all look forward to maybe a short work week, spending time with family, getting together. And here it comes, and it's the anniversary of this attack at the hands of Daryl Brooks. But we're going to have an ability to move on from that. We have the ability, we have the tools as a community, Your Honor, to do that. And that's definitely because of everyone that responded to this incident, the first responders, the police officers, the medical personnel that got paged in on a Sunday night when we're all hunkered down, Packers had played, it's cold, it's dark, and they all had to spring into action and respond. And there were law enforcement from all over southeastern Wisconsin, fire department, EMTs. No one paused, no one hesitated for a second. They just came and helped. And I think that's something that our families, our community can build on as well, Your Honor, to say evil is easily overcome here. Daryl Brooks deserved to be locked up for the rest of his life. He cannot be trusted ever, ever again. I ask you to consider, I'm not going to go into it, but we had filed the other acts evidence, some of the language in that other acts evidence, the intimidation of the victim. It played out repeatedly in this courtroom. He tried to intimidate you. He tried to intimidate me. He tried to intimidate the witnesses. He tries and tries and tries, but he fails. He's not the strongest person in the courtroom. He's the weakest person in the courtroom.
Brooks is smiling, smirking, and clapping now.
That's what he is. His character is void. I asked Attorney Basie, what's the word I can use for low character, and then we came up with the fact he really has no character. It's one of the factors the court needs to consider. Protection of the public, severity of the crime, they all weigh heavily in a stacked sentence, Your Honor, consecutive maximum across the board. Every one of these victims deserves that. I don't know how we look at any of these victims and say, well, he got concurrent time on your case because your pain and suffering wasn't quite as bad as the guy before you or the girl before you. They all deserve that sentence that speaks to their count. The restitution, Your Honor, I filed the paperwork. We are seeking restitution in the dollar amounts from my letter that we reviewed this morning. I'm asking under 97320, sub 11, sub F, that you enter an order that the Department of Corrections shall keep 50% of any wages Mr. Brooks may earn in prison, and any monies that may be paid on his books or canteen account, and direct those monies to be paid directly towards restitution. He should not be able to work or receive canteen without paying down that restitution. I also included in my letter the request that should any monies ever be paid by contract to Mr. Brooks, that he should attempt to benefit financially from these crimes, that those monies would be placed into an escrow account maintained by the Department of Justice. And
all right, this is again live from the Waukesha County Circuit Courthouse. This is Waukesha County District Attorney Sue Opper in her sentencing statements to Judge Jennifer Doro. You heard several moments ago Brooks attempting to interrupt and demanding to be removed from the courtroom, apparently incapable of listening to this. He has been repeatedly smirking, clapping, muttering during Opper's comments. We're going to go back. Let's go back.
Fences and things like that. Can you imagine when you heard these mothers describing what their children have been through? Can you imagine the medical bills on these? And he's lucky he's getting off with a $200,000 bill for restitution, Your Honor. I think he should have to pay every last penny of it. I also wanted to wrap up again, Your Honor, by saying you didn't hear from all the victims. Certainly, there were some that just cannot bring themselves to this court in any fashion, in any way. And we ask you to keep them in mind as well, especially the Bill Hospel family. Bill was, you know, walking in support of his wife's team and trying to be in a supportive role, as he had done on many other occasions, and lost his life for that simple action, that simple act of good that he participated in. There were some groups that are not represented here today, but I know you heard their story at trial, and you're aware of what some of them went through that maybe wasn't specifically addressed here today. But I just ask you to keep in mind that we certainly presented a wide array of victims to you, but not everyone. And then certainly, as I mentioned at the outset, the community as a whole absolutely demands justice for these victims, these families, and for the community itself, that Daryl Brooks has no redeeming value, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Brooks, as far as I can tell from the correspondence from your mom and from you, I believe there may be closer to three individuals plus yourself who wish to speak at sentencing. Since we lost an hour or so today, although we did go late, so and arguably we gained it back, I still was thinking about starting at noon just to make sure there's ample time. I will start the Zoom shortly before that. The information has been provided to your mother, and I believe she will provide it to the other individuals on your list who wish to attend and make a statement on your behalf. So right at noon, we will start that process. Typically, I would hear from the individuals on your behalf with you going last, but you tell me if you want it to go a different order.
That's fine.
All right, and then I'll hear from you. I may take a short break before I come back out, or even a longer break, depending on the timing of everything tomorrow, to just collect all of the final statements and process them. Obviously, I'll take the overnight to process what I've heard today, in addition to what I've already been doing on my own.
And I haven't seen any written statements on your behalf. I don't know if anything came in today during this hearing, but I'll rely on the verbal statements that are made and then yours at the time of sentencing, or prior to me imposing sentencing, okay?
I apologize. It's very emotional and frustrating right now, so I apologize to you, Your Honor, and court.
I understand it's frustrating, and I understand that
it's just very hard to sit and, you know, it's almost like a pile on. So I still understand that I have to conduct myself respectfully, so I apologize.
I think the apology needs to be made to the victim, sir, more so than this court.
Definitely. I was just referring to...
All right, anything else from either party before we conclude for this evening from the state?
No, Judge, we'll see you at noon. Thank you.
From you, sir?
Not at this time.
All right, we are in recess. I'll see everyone tomorrow at noon. Thank you.
That was quite extraordinary. Again, we moved in live into the sentencing recommendation from Waukesha County District Attorney Sue Opper. And for those of you who are listening, as she piled on with her points of outrage over the conduct of Brooks, in classic Daryl Brooks fashion, didn't want to listen to it. And for the first time during this trial, after he's been thrown out of the courtroom and taken to the other courtroom repeatedly because of his bad behavior, he asked to be excused. And the judge, you don't get to request to go there. And she made him sit there and listen to it. And he acted up the whole way through. And then you heard toward the end him offering a typical type of Daryl Brooks apology, in which, again, it's all about him. And, well, it's just hard to have to listen to this. It's just, yeah, I'm sure it's just terrible. We feel badly that you had to listen to that Daryl Brooks. Anyway, Paul says doesn't get this. What you're getting is you cannot have a more perfect definition of a narcissist than this. Every single reaction that he has is based on how whatever is happening at this moment affects him. And there's nothing else with that. So now he decides at the end of this, well, maybe he's somehow thinking that she's going to shave 1 or 2 years out of his 97 trillion year sentence by throwing in one of his apologies. And Judge Doro, who again is very, very sharp-witted, and just throws back, you need to apologize to the victim. Well, the other thing is, he just can't shut up. He just can't shut up. And what he has despised about this whole process is they keep telling him he has to shut up, and he'll take every opportunity. And again, you'll get it tomorrow when he offers his sentencing statement. And what you will see, I'm just telling you right now, there will be no remorse whatsoever. There will simply be, you don't know me, you're mischaracterizing me, my heart, and this, that, and the Bible, and, you know, my mother, and it's been hard on me, and on and on and on. Anyway, we went on long during that segment because I had a hunch it would be good, and it was good. Standing up for Milwaukee, this is the Mark Belling Late Afternoon Show. On News Talk 1130 WISN, when you do a drive time program like mine, I, of course, believe in total flexibility, which is why our hourly clock is all screwed up here. And you play a few things by ear, and I certainly was not expecting to devote a huge chunk of the portion to the sentencing statements. There are statements today from victims and relatives of victims in the Brooks case, but just very, very powerful stuff, and it just didn't stop being powerful. And I want to move on, you know, second here to a couple of other comments, but it's since I'm starting a segment, I want to put in perspective a little bit of a summary here. Here's what is extraordinary about this. Just think of all the trials we've watched and all the cases. Most of the cases that get lots of attention on TV, part of the reason they get a lot of attention is they're not open and shut. Like OJ, you didn't know if he'd be convicted, or Rittenhouse, you didn't know if Kyle would be convicted, or Casey Anthony, or just so many of those others. I mean, Dahmer, yes, we knew he'd be convicted, but the majority of them, there is that sense of mystery over that. This was a completely different thing. Secondly, when you see most of these cases, you never, ever hear from the perpetrator. Maybe they get called to the stand and they testify in their own defense, but otherwise you don't hear from them. What this was a non-stop opportunity to see and observe the monster behaving the way the monster felt like behaving. I mean, there may be a case or two that people remind me of Ted Bundy. I don't think there were cameras in the courtroom. If there were, I don't ever see videos on YouTube of Ted Bundy. I know he did interviews and so on, but that'd be the closest thing to relate it to. But this has just been extraordinary to watch the behavior of somebody with such utter lack of remorse and a community that has responded with such courage to this unspeakable level of tragedy. It's just been, to me, compelling, and I don't want to keep saying a teaching moment, but it is a teaching moment. All right, with that, we'll move on. And again, for those of you who didn't hear Judge Doro's statement from the court, Brooks is going to present, apparently through video, through Zoom, remote. I think they said three witnesses. I think he talked about his mother and a couple of other relatives, and one of them would be the mother of one of his children, not the one that he had the trouble with the day of the parade, but one of the other ones. And then he's going to talk himself, and after that, the judge said that she'll pronounce sentence, and she's going to give him the max or some whatever you can legally do with the max. I mean, each of the murder counts calls for life without parole, and when they talked about concurrent versus consecutive, concurrent means, for instance, let's suppose I was sentenced to three crimes, 5 years. Concurrent would be 5 years total, they all at the same time. Consecutive is when one is done, you then start serving the other. And life without parole, it becomes redundant. And then add in all of these other 76 counts for the number of people that were hit and all the other things that go on. And District Attorney Opper is essentially saying she wants a stacked sentence. She wants him hammered with one of these, one right after the other, after the other, after the other, after the other. And you may say, what's the point? Well, practically speaking, in terms of Brooks getting out, which he never will, there is no point to it. In terms of, on the record, indicating that each one of these individual crimes is a terrible act, and therefore it needs to be put on the record that he's going to account for that. That's what she's asking for, and I believe on a couple of things like the bail jumping, you can't convict someone or serve two separate bail jumping sentences at the same time. A couple of little things like that might have to be factored in, but otherwise I'm sure the judge is going to hammer Brooks with about as much as she's legally able to come up with and make her statement tomorrow. All right, there. Remarkable stuff to listen to, though, wasn't it? Okay. I want to move on to a couple of other stories, political. First of all, a story in the state of Wisconsin Republican Party. Paul Farrow, who is the Waukesha County executive and also the chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, is not going to seek re-election as party chairman. Now, part of this is he's running for re-election as county executive in Waukesha County. Whether or not the generally disappointing results, and they were mixed, for the Republicans in Wisconsin in the most recent election impacted this, or the fact that Paul Farrow is found himself in a very difficult job here dealing with two factions of the party, rabble-rousers like me who are just fed up with party establishment, institutional types sitting around in Madison and paying themselves money and being perfectly content with losing election after election. And then the other people who believe in the current way that the party is structured and don't want to give up their fiefdom. He clearly was caught in the middle of that. I don't know if any of that has anything to do with him choosing not to seek another term as chairman. Now, the chairman doesn't run the party day to day, but the chairman is in charge. In other words, it's like a chairman of a board of a business. That person's not usually at the company on a daily basis, but ultimately would oversee the CEO and so on. The Republican Party does have an executive director, Mark Jefferson. He's got that job, but Farrow is the guy who's the chairman of the party, and he's not seeking re-election. There are already names being thrown around to succeed him. Ben Volkel, who's been an aide to Ron Johnson, his name's being tossed around out there. Brian Schimming, who you hear often in WISN, political operative. There's a guy named Jesse Garza, who's a political consultant from Western Wisconsin up near the Twin Cities area near the Minnesota border. He's being talked about. I would think that the last thing the Republican Party needs to do is put yet another political consultant in charge of the party. But there is that political news. So the beginning of the shakeup of Republican operations in Wisconsin post the election continues. Speaking of shakeup, there is now in the United States Senate a formal challenge to Mitch McConnell as Senate Republican leader. I can't recall the last time some. First of all, can anybody recall the last time McConnell wasn't the Republican? I'd have to think about who the last one was. It just doesn't seem like Mitch has had that job for 74 years. Paul said, way too long. I mean, if I thought about it long enough, I would come up with who was the last GOP leader of the Senate. I could go back to the House has had incredible turnover. I mean, speakers there and Republican leaders last 2-3 years. There've been a zillion of them. But Mitch has had the job over in the Senate. Who was it? Boy, oh boy. Been a long time, and he's had control of that position, generally speaking, because the majority of his colleagues have been satisfied with him. And I think on balance, over time, McConnell's been a good leader. The job of the leader is to push through the agenda of his caucus in the Senate. That's what the job of a leader is. It's the job of Robin Voss as the state assembly speaker, LeMahieu in the Wisconsin State Senate, and so on. And the difficulty, and I've empathized with McConnell's difficulty, is that he's got in that, first of all, when they're in the majority, it's always a tiny majority, or when they're in the minority, even then, you're talking about, you know, Republicans in the Senate from such a massively broad spectrum. You have Susan Collins of Maine, for example, who's at best a moderate. You have Murkowski from Alaska, who was moderate to almost liberal. And then on the other end, you've got Ron Johnson and Ted Cruz and some of the others who are staunchly conservative. And on so many of these issues, particularly when they're either in the majority or in a narrow minority, to keep all 50 or 49 or whatever the number is together voting on the same page has been extremely difficult, and he's juggled it very well. I think his best moments have been during the times that they've been in the majority and he's exerted power. I think that in retrospect, the greatest accomplishment of Mitch McConnell was in the final year of Obama's term when Obama nominated Merrick Garland to the United States Supreme Court. And you talk about Republicans not having, you know what, gonads. This was gonads. He just said, screw it. We're not going to take up the nomination. And he did that for a year. I mean, even I am not sure that that's okay. But he didn't do it. And as a result, one less liberals on the United States Supreme Court. And that vacancy was left open until Trump filled it after he beat Hillary. I mean, that showed a pretty strong backbone from a guy, McConnell, who a lot of people don't think have one. Secondly, during the Trump administration, when the Republicans controlled the Senate in those first couple of years, they shoved through doggone near everything that Trump wanted to have done. The McConnell was able to hold that together. And most importantly, every one of Trump's nominees to the Supreme Court passed. And you'll recall in the case of Kavanaugh, there was intense pressure on Susan Collins to not confirm him because of those bogus allegations of sexual assault when he was a kid and so on. McConnell kept them all together. I don't recall if the margin they had was 51 or 52, but I think he could have only lost one vote, and he got them all to vote for the confirmation. And he, in terms of strategy, you know, I think he's been very, very good, but this all leads up to, but, you know, it's like, the Packers are going to have to face a decision at the end of the year if Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback for the future. I mean, at some point, you could be great at something for a long, long time, but eventually you're not, or it's time for somebody else, and so on. And I think it's time for somebody else. And the reason I think that is that the role of the leader has to be, just what I was describing that Mitch had been so good at prior to this, sort of unifying everyone and keeping everyone together. He's not part of that anymore. He made the decision to pick sides. And the side that he picked is that he's been at war with Donald Trump and his wing of the party. Well, that's not a unifying force. And secondly, the biggest job of the leader is every 2 years when they have elections, it's the leadership that oversees these campaigns. They sit on a ton of money with the Senate Republican Campaign Committee, and he just has to decide, do I dole this money out to Pennsylvania? Does Wisconsin get this? Or what about that state? And so on and so on. And they didn't do well in the Senate elections. Best case scenario, they're going to stand pat. They might even lose a seat, depending on how Georgia plays out. They might be down to 49 as opposed to the current 50. It's time to move on. And the challenger is Rick Scott, Senator from Florida. Now, the advantage Scott presents is you can't find a state right now in an election that, at best for Republicans, was mixed, that at worst was disappointing. The star of the country was obviously Florida. So Scott comes from that state, from a party that has a thriving Republican Party. In addition to that, Scott's a former governor. While he is conservative, he's not perceived as being, he's not as, you know, Ted Cruz conservative, but he's also certainly well to the right of, you know, the liberal wing of the party. He's where I think a lot of the senators are. He's thought to be a pretty good unifying force. He's an alternative. Now, the fact that he's offering this challenge means the whatever number is, and if Herschel Walker wins his election, he'd vote. In fact, there's debate right now among the Republicans. Should we vote now before the Georgia race is decided, or should we wait until after Georgia comes in to see if Walker's a senator or not? You know, you need to get to 25 or 26, depending on how many senators there are, in order to win, and the head coning goes on. Some aren't going to be committing one way or another, and some are publicly going to come out and support a candidate. And Scott might not be successful, but the very fact that he thinks, you wouldn't make this statement unless you felt McConnell was vulnerable. It's also possible that Mitch simply decides, okay, I won't be the leader anymore. The problem with that is he might then not want to be a senator, and the governor of Kentucky is a Democrat, and that would mean that they get to name his replacement. Mitch would have to not be the leader, but still sit there in the Senate, and that sticks in their craws a lot. Anyway, you have, among those that don't want McConnell to stay in, some, it's not just like young upstart senators. Ron Johnson's now starting his third term. Josh Hawley of Missouri's been there for a while. Ted Cruz is looking for a new leader. Marco Rubio, who's now, believe it or not, kind of a senior member of the Senate, he's among them. And there may be others that come around to this. Before I quickly go to the break, you've got this big debate as Trump's making his announcement tonight and this, that, and the other thing about whether the Republican Party needs to move on from Trump. And what's happened is this Trump versus McConnell battle has become toxic. And I've made it clear I think the Republicans need to move into a post-Trump era, but that also means moving into a post-McConnell era. They've nuked one another out, essentially, is what I think they've done in terms of their effectiveness. Some Republicans don't want to vote for senators if it means empowering Mitch, and other Republicans don't want to vote for Republicans if it somehow means that Trump's people are in there. Well, the one thing you don't want your leaders to do is being divisive forces that drive away members. It's time to move beyond the both of them, I think. So, and I think that anyone who says, well, we got to move beyond Trump but keep Mitch in there, you're full of crap. But also, anybody who says that, you know, we got to get rid of Trump, but rather McConnell, but Trump's still the leader of the party, they're wrong, too. Need to move beyond the both of them. News Talk 1130 WISN, Mark Belling, late afternoon show. Multiple news reports indicate Trump is, in fact, announcing tonight that he's running for president. His goal, of course, trying to be get the jump on everybody else by getting his hat in the ring. And they said, for people who couldn't wait for the political season to end with last week's, you don't understand, we are in a permanent political season in the United States. So the presidential campaign is now on. Now, obviously, announcing something now, we're not even the year before yet, we're still the 2 years before, doesn't mean that he can't change his mind and any number of things can happen in the interim. But the debate that is roiling within the Republican Party, obviously, is going to continue. Were it not for all of the stuff with regard to the Brooks case today, well, there was a segment, and I'll either do this now tomorrow or Thursday, but I've been reflecting on myself and figuring out the election, and I'll give you a very, very short Cliff Notes abridgment here. But some things, you know, we go back on the basis of what's happened in the past. There are some reliable barometers on what's going to happen in a national election, and one is, it just, it's held from the beginning of the history of the country. When the economy is good, the incumbents do well, and when the economy is bad, they don't. I mean, it holds forever. It's just it's always been the biggest issue. Thus, you know, the slogan from the 92 Clinton campaign, it's the economy, stupid. The economy's crap, yet it didn't. Was it a bad year for the party? Well, you got to try to learn from this. And as I say, I'm always most interested in the things that I've been wrong about. You try to learn from what happened. The second thing here is, here in the state of Wisconsin, we have this trend of never voting for governor for the party that controls the White House. And Tommy Thompson's the only guy who defied this. Well, now Tony Evers won anyway, and try to figure out how that happened. And one thing is certainly clear, this was not a Wisconsin-only kind of thing. There are other states in which Republicans were expected to do well. Nevada, they were expected to win both the governorship and the Senate seat. They won the governorship but did not win the Senate seat. There are some states where it was expected to be close, where it was not, where Democratic incumbents easily won. And then there's the general disaster of Arizona, where the Republicans in Arizona lost the governorship with Carrie Lake, who was an admired candidate by a lot of people, but she lost, and they lost the Senate race as well. But the counter to that is that there were certain states, certainly there were states that ran completely contrary to this. The Ohio Republican governor was reelected by more than 20 points. For people who say that Trump is toxic, the Trump-endorsed candidate for the Senate, J.D. Vance, he won by a wipeout, too. Not as much as the governor who wasn't a Trump guy, but he won by a huge margin. And then there's Florida, which you talk about diversity. I mean, it's the most diverse state that there is in terms of young, old, ethnicity. Every possible, you know, the parts of the panhandle are like the Deep South. Parts of Miami, Fort Lauderdale are like the United Nations. You've got the Palm Beach area, which is like a suburb of New York City. You've got the southwestern coast of Florida, which is, so far as I can tell, only transplanted Wisconsin. It's just every possible kind of thing. So you would think the ultimate 50-50 state, which it has been forever and ever and ever. And instead, the Republicans won everything everywhere in that state. So you can't say that this trend happened everywhere. So the key is to learn why it didn't happen in the places that it didn't, why it did happen in the places that it did. And I'll offer some more in-depth comments on that either tomorrow or Thursday. I want to get to the FTX story. There are so many different angles to this, and it's only because we've been jammed with the election and Brooks that I haven't been able to dive into it in any depth, and I've got the same problem today. FTX is, for people who don't know anything about crypto, it's kind of hard to explain this, but it's like the bank that you put your crypto in. Or if you have stocks, it's like the brokerage account you hold. The difference is crypto is not regulated, meaning the exchanges that you put the money, put your crypto in is not regulated, which is apparently like a shock to some of these people, even though they've been told it forever and ever and ever. First of all, crypto is backed by nothing. It's just there. The companies that say that will hold your digital currency that are in there aren't regulated by anyone at all. And to say that it is money uses money in a very broad sense. I mean, I think of there was a Beverly Hillbillies episode. I can't believe I'm quoting Jake Clampett here, but it makes the point as well as I could possibly make it. For those of you who don't remember that, did you watch the original TV version, right? Paul said, yes. I mean, when I was a kid, it was actually, they weren't even reruns. That's what it was like new. That's how old I am. Anyway, it's the story of these hillbillies, and they make, you know, Jed strikes gold, so he moves to a mansion in Beverly Hills, and it was a clever enough take on sitcoms. Anyway, he puts all of his money, which by the 60s, I think they said it was like $40 million. By that standard, that's a ton of money, and he put it into this bank owned by, you know, run by Mr. Drysdale, whatever they called the bank. And Jed decided, I don't know what it was that caused this, he decided he wanted to take his money out of the bank. So he goes to the bank and asks for his money. And Drysdale said, well, you want me to give you $40 million in cash? You know, Jed can't fathom what that actually looks like. And Drysdale said, well, it's not here. And Jed's giving wait a minute. What do you mean it's not here? And of course, money isn't, you know, it's not in cash. You've got securities and, you know, financial instruments. It's writing and so on. I mean, you know, between the money's, you know, it's not all just sitting there in ones, fives, and tens. And Jed just couldn't wrap his head around that and thought maybe his money had been stolen and so on. But that, in fact, is what crypto is. It's just whatever someone says that it is. So anyway, with FTX, which was the second largest crypto exchange in the world, the guy who ran it, the guy who was the founder of the company, Sam Bankman-Fried, was as big a deal as you could be. I mentioned earlier in the program, he is believed to be the number two biggest Democratic donor here in the 2022 cycle. He's become an incredible power, and partly because he's thrown all of this money around and he's bought an incredible amount of influence. Only Soros is believed to have given more than him. Only 4 weeks ago, he was just still being this genius, this new financial power. Is he more important than Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan Chase, etc.? And within a matter of 2 weeks, wiped out, and it's all gone. And now there's a criminal investigation into it. And the suggestion is that he used FTX and whatever collateral you would want to assign to the value of it. And again, how do you even value what FTX is worth? FTX doesn't, aside from the fact that it's holding accounts, what's it worth? It's the same problem that many people have with a lot of tech companies. How do you put a valuation in this with an oil company? Well, here's the price of oil. Here's how much oil they own. They own these many gas stations. They got a refinery, etc. How do you put a value on this? Well, FTX used as collateral the value of FTX to invest in other things, including this company that he also owns called Alameda. And in addition to having an exchange, he created a crypto coin himself. I think I get the name of it here. He had a specific currency itself. Then, of course, he bases the company in the Bahamas. So not only we don't regulate crypto much in the United States, but since he's in the Bahamas, it's completely unregulated altogether. And now the suggestion is this is all being commingled in. FTX money was used to shore up the currency he created, and both of them were used to prop up Alameda, and collateral was pledged for all these other things. And figuring out whether, anyway, the exchange has collapsed, and no one knows whether or not any of the people who had crypto in the exchange have anything. If they had it based on his coin, which now is essentially worthless, they may have nothing there at all. For people who argue that they've been ripped off, well, clearly they have been ripped off. On the other hand, is there anyone who would not have thought that fraudsters would be involved in this field? In the meantime, the money that was made by him when he had money went to elect a whole lot of Democrats last week. For people who talk about Republicans and insurrections because a bunch of guys go to January 6th to Washington, D.C. and somebody lets them into the Capitol, here's a guy that built a massive fraud and used it to help steal elections all over the country. Here in Wisconsin, and this is going to be part of when I finally have this big political commentary here. Here in Wisconsin, we've got a debate going on now as Republicans argue with one another. Did Tim Michaels mislead everyone when he implied that he could self-fund his campaign? Because obviously Tim got spent into the ground by the Evers campaign. This website, Wisconsin Right Now, well, they were pro-Becky. Tim spent more money, his own money against Clayfish in the primary than he did in the general. Again, is it a fair shot or not? I'll decide that. I'll give you my position on that at a later moment. The reality is that even though Tim put a ton of his own money into the general election campaign, the Evers money overwhelmed them. Understand that Tim had financial backing from Diane Hendricks, one of the biggest Republican backers in America, and from the Ulides, again, among the biggest Republican backers in America, plus the money Tim put in himself, and they didn't even come close to Evers' money. The Democrats have all this money, and so much of it comes from people who become billionaires in the tech field. And they end up, because campaign finance laws limit how much you can give to a candidate, they give it to all these groups and organizations that they go out and fund. And it's all over the place. You don't hear Republicans whining much anymore about the influence of money in politics, given the fact that they have an incredible edge. Again, as Republicans figure out their pathways to victories in the future, they're going to have to figure out a way to get some conservative fat cats to start matching all the money that's coming from leftist fat cats all over the place. And one of the problems that exists is if a Republican, look at the, for instance, with the Koch brothers, look at the grief, one of them now dead, look at the grief they got when they bankrolled a lot of Republicans in the 90s and the early zeros and so on. There are Republican fat cats who don't want the abuse given if they give money to Republican candidates, whereas the Democratic fat cats in the tech world and so on, they're immune from this. My side doesn't give them any grief. And often, they're untouchable. They don't own retail companies. Like, how do you get Soros? How do you get the guy who runs the cryptocurrency? How do you get Zuckerberg? Okay, I'm not going to go on Facebook anymore. Okay, fine. That's really going to kill him. He's worth zillions of Bezos and all of these guys. It's an organic crisis for Republicans that the Democrats now have way more money because they have way more zillionaires that are pumping in money in all these races all over the United States. 617. What a breath in here. It has been a busy show. News Talk 1130 WISN, Mark Belling, late afternoon show. You know how when Trump started putting these nicknames on everybody, how it was always just so effective and he would like nail them? You notice how it just doesn't seem funny anymore? now that he's turning on Republicans that most other Republicans admire, it's fallen flat, and I don't know that he's picked up on that. For example, Winsome Sears is the lieutenant governor of Virginia, African-American woman. She was the running mate of Glenn Youngkin back last year in 2021, and the left just despises her and her essential up-from-the-bootstraps life that she's led and so on, and she represents everything that's a threat to their party. Well, anyway, she came out and said as much as she likes Trump, his time has passed, and terms and Trump's response, he just laying into her in the same way that he laid into Glenn Youngkin. He made fun of Youngkin a couple of days ago. Well, his name sounds Chinese. Again, it's not funny. And what happens when people who take kind of cheap shots that everybody finds funny and you stop finding them funny? There's no real reason to figure out why they're no longer funny anymore, but they don't seem that funny when you start taking shots. It doesn't play the same as when you take shots at, say, Jeb Bush and so on, figures that represented a Republican establishment that I think a lot of people felt needed to be moved aside. He's now trying to shove aside the people that are coming after him, sort of moving him aside. Let's move to another story here. I've been on this for a few days, and I don't want to stay away from it because I think we're at the in the early stages of something really big, and that is the tech companies in America may have gotten too big and maybe they peaked. Wall Street Journal today, Amazon set to lay off thousands. I mean, for the last 30 years, when you heard about Amazon and jobs, all it ever was is Amazon's hiring. You drive on I-94, the billboards everywhere, Amazon's hiring. And Amazon is just so huge. What is Amazon not? Amazon's one of the top three companies in the world in the cloud. Amazon has its own TV network, its own streaming service right now with Prime Video, which is just enormous. You know, they got the NFL games on Thursday night. Then there's the regular old Amazon. They own Whole Foods. They're trying to move into all sorts of other areas of retail that they don't currently dominate. They've got a massive transportation company. Now, most of their transportation is done in-house with their own vehicles and their own drivers. And they've got their huge Alexa service, which has gotten to be just a big... Well, anyway, they're a big, giant company, and it's dawned on some investors that the stock price is through the roof and it isn't really matching the kind of earnings that the company has. And suddenly now Amazon is downsizing. Numerous other tech companies are doing the same thing. I just wonder if we're in a decade in which people have decided that these companies essentially have grown as much as they're ever going to grow. And they're not going to grow 50 and 60% every year anymore. And instead, they're going to grow 10 and 12% the same way other mature companies did. I remember Walmart. Walmart was the boom stock for like 20 years, from like 79 to 90, in that it was dead money for 15, didn't move at all. Because Walmart grew explosively, and after that, it just kind of grew because originally there were hardly any Walmarts anywhere. And then the next thing you know, everywhere you look, there was a Walmart. Starbucks has faced the same kind of situation. So this cloud of the tech companies that's been premised on the massive growth in their stock prices, that might end. And one of the ways that it might end is some of the shareholders of Amazon might wonder, couldn't we make a whole lot of money if we spun off some of these companies? For instance, if they simply spun off Prime Video and made that a separate company, all the shareholders would now own stock in that. Probably wouldn't cause a dent in the overall Amazon thing because they're so huge. So it happens when these companies get so big, maybe the tech companies have all gotten to be too big. I don't want this to sound like an obituary because the guy's not dead, but who do you think I'm talking about? You don't know. It could be anybody. It's going to sound like I'm talking about a dead guy, but he's not dead. He's just sort of semi-retiring. I enjoy talking about this because he probably hates the fact that I'm going to bring it up, but the guy who actually hired me at WISN way back in 1989 and has been running WTMJ forever and kind of running it sort of badly over there, he's cashing it in. I don't mean cashing it in like croaking. He's just retiring. Steve Wexler. Anything you say about a guy, like at the end stages like this, it sounds like you're talking about him after he's dead. And again, he's not dead. They say he's going to take another job, like being a coach or whatever. I mean, it's sort of sliding into not being in anything. They named somebody to replace him. I mean, maybe I know who she is, maybe I don't. Emily Dillinger, I name rings a bell, but I don't. Who do I know what those people are over there? Anyway, the thing that I just find amusing about Wexler is I think the smartest thing he ever did in radio is his biggest regret. Usually, the smartest thing you do is usually the thing that you're most happy with having done. I believe in the case of Wexler, the most brilliant radio move he ever made is the biggest regret of his professional career. You're looking at me with confusion. Hired me! I mean, he hired me, then he left and went back over there, then a bunch of other places, and he's been trying to figure out how to kill the white whale, me, and WISN, as he's sitting over there at TMJ forever and ever. First, they, he's done back and forth in bed in other cities and all, but he's mostly over there, and when they split the TV and the radio off, they put him in charge of all the radio division, etc. Now this company has sold a couple of times. It's owned by Carmazan, the guy that owns those sports stations, and so on. Good Karma's the name of it. And he's hung around in there. And first, TMJ was going to, okay, we'll do conservative talk just like ISN. All right, they couldn't do that. And then Charlie stopped being conservative. So then they tried to do whatever they were doing in the middle and had Gene Miller in. Or now there's, okay, we do this. And they still have successful ratings and there's still some strength to the station. But everybody just kind of knows that TMJ is the station that's just sort of, you know, blah, right? They kind of are. And I know that Wexler didn't want to be the blah station. He wanted to be the station that had all the stuff going on with all the excitement like us, but he couldn't be that because he has no identity. Who has an identity? Us, because of me and other people that are here. So I think the biggest regret that Wexler ever had, I mean, if he doesn't hire me at WISN, WISN would have gone to the crapper years ago. We would have been like WEMP and all the others. Instead, here we are around there knocking them off of number one and this, that, and the other thing, all because of him. So he's the rare case of somebody who the smartest thing that he ever did turns out to be the dumbest thing he ever did. I mean, I could try to relate that to something, but I'm not sure exactly what it would be. I mean, somebody that marries like the greatest, hottest woman of all time, and they have a great marriage for 5 years, and then it all goes to hell. I don't know. I can't really come up with anything else. I mean, maybe a GM hiring a football coach, but then the GM goes and gets named the president of the Bears. It's all I can relate it to. Since I can't relate it to anything else, I think I'll just shut up.